Welcome to FTW Radio. It's gaming for the win. It's what gamers do want.
You're out. This is our new direction.
I'm out of here.
Yeah, no, I was at an offsite last week. That's why I wasn't here. And we had all sorts of talks about, you know, metrics and how to get more listeners and stuff. So this is what I came up with. You guys into that?
It's pretty brilliant.
Yeah. Gaming for the win, because I hear that's what people say now if something's cool. For the win.
It's true.
Yeah. So gaming, that's what we are now. FTW Radio.
FTL Radio.
Oh, man.
I'm just kidding. We're not. They made me do that. They made me do that opener.
All right. Okay.
Are we still GFW Radio, then?
We are.
Because it's a brand now.
EGM Live is being rebranded, but weird.
Oh, yeah. How can they get to rebrand?
Isn't that weird? EGM is rebranding, even though it's still EGM.
And we don't have a magazine, and we're still GFW.
Yeah.
Huh.
What's wrong with that picture?
That's a conundrum.
Well, Games for Windows still exists outside the magazine.
Or does it?
Yeah.
Well, EGM still exists.
Well.
I did get a new Games for Windows game on my desk. I hadn't seen one in a long time. And one showed up today, and it
really?
Renewed my
it
whole, all my faith in
Mass
the
Effect?
Platform. No, it was Kung Fu Panda.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We didn't get Mass Effect.
No, we didn't get Mass Effect.
But I did get Combat Arms from Nexon, so maybe we can be Nexon Radio.
We'll be whoever's paying us.
Right.
Heinz Ketchup Radio. What does it matter?
Puerto Rican candy. You know, we talked about this last week about how we got the candy from Puerto Rico. And there was it was basically cornmeal and a little bit of sugar in construction paper cylinder. And I was surprised to find out we have quite a few listeners in Puerto Rico, and it was cool. They all wrote in, and they all knew immediately what it was. And they're like, this is Gofio. And this stuff is classic because no one on the island will eat this shit. And it's like, furthermore, the name, what you do is that if you do eat it, you get it, you turn it to like, you know, wet cement in your mouth. And then you spit it out in someone's hair, but as you spit, you say, Gofio! So you dump the shit then in their hair.
And in their hair?
Yeah.
Huh. So that's what was that thing you gave me to eat? Was that out of that? God, that thing was awful.
Oh, no, I gave you, it was like a guava jelly,
ugh.
But it smelled like a dirty sock or something.
It looked bad, it smelled bad, and then it just tasted fucking foul. No offense.
You're just defending a candy.
Yeah.
So do not want, Jeff?
Do not want!
That you've been told that this is a mandate.
I'm going to, all those memes I'm going to use now.
Yeah. Right.
Bad awesome. Candy confirmed.
Now it's funny again.
Yeah, we're bringing it back to the funny.
It's retro, so
retro
see T-shirts of it at Hot Topic soon.
Did we introduce ourselves yet? I didn't do the date, any of that shit this week. I missed one week, and I've just fallen off.
I think you should let people figure it out for themselves.
It's the day that you're listening to this. That's what day it is.
I hope.
If you need any more help than that, look at a fucking calendar.
It's also the 11th.
Who am I, your timekeeper?
It's June 11th.
Get a life. So let's introduce ourselves.
It's Ryan Scott.
Anthony Gallegos.
Gofio.
And Sean Malloy.
Hi.
That's
your new, like, new kids on the block name now.
That's your
new Gofio.
That's your new name.
Gofio. Wait, what's your,
they should
what's
your
nickname?
That would be a good boy band. Gofio.
Yeah, it is.
Chuff?
And Nurgle. No, Nurgle's
oh, Nurgle. Nurgle. Anthony, no, I think, aren't you, like,
made him sad.
Can't we just say Anthony's, like, officially on this podcast now? Right? He's not really a guest anymore. I mean, we don't have a magazine.
Yeah, we have.
So
yeah.
It's not like we're the magazine staff plus guests. Mm-hmm. I think you're on. I think
we
you're
are
on.
Who we are.
Yeah,
I think it's official as of last week, because usually when I fill in the comments part in the ID3 tag for the MP3,
uh-huh.
I put with Jeff Green, Sean Elliott, you know, the regulars, and then
right.
period, and then featuring uh-huh. you know, Bob Beato and Anthony. But this time, he was in the with section.
Wow.
But so Bob Beato will continue to be on, and then also
uh-huh.
Crispin Boyer, he's been on a few times, and
yes.
Now that he's left... his office here.
Uh-huh.
He's freelancing full time. He said that he would love to come in more.
He's welcome.
So this is our
he's opportunity part of the extended Brodeo family
to say farewell to Crispin. I mean, he's not really going anywhere. We're still going to be working with him. He's going
right.
to be doing features and stuff. But I mean, yeah, it's a he's a
He was an institution here.
He was an institution here, and I think it's a serious... I don't know. I'm not supposed to say it this way, but I mean, it's a serious loss to me as having a colleague, someone who mm-hmm. I really, really admire and respect and, you know, have fun working with. And, yeah, I mean, I learned so much from him over the years, and I don't think... I'm not even sure if I would have had the EGM job that got me started doing this if not for him, because he was the first person I sent an email to and was like, hey, you know, like, what do you have any information you can give me about, you know, potential work and stuff like that. But then, and he was a first rate writer. I mean, I look forward to seeing the stuff he does now, even beyond gaming and stuff. I know he's got a few things lined up, so I look forward to that. But I also wanted to celebrate his parting gift for the game group. And that was, it's a shame that it wasn't caught on video because it would have made the perfect one-up show segment. But he basically took, this is on his blog as well, so everyone go to his blog and check it out. He took a bunch of random old magazines that we had laying around the office that were polybagged, and very carefully with an X-Acto knife opened the bags up and inserted new bonuses. And then he had the our artist Mike Cruz produce, you know, new, you know, branding for the bag so that it would say, like, so they, for one example, they took the, it was called the Battle Stations issue of EGM, and it was showed a picture of the PS3 with the tomato thrown on it. So he got a bunch of grape tomatoes, and he put those in the bag, and it was like, with free tomatoes is on the thing. He did another. He got a CGW, and he included, like, a Golden Girls novel and put that in there. He got Forbes, and he put, like, Straight Shooter or whatever, like this, like,
PS2 game.
This business PS2 game, put that in there. And random action figure parts and stuff would come with one. Like, General Badass Ree is supposed to be a Star Wars character. Came with, like, a fanny pack and something. But so he took all those when he was done, and he set them in the magazine rack at Walgreens down the street. And because the people that work there have no idea, they will sit there forever and ever until the next time when, you know, when the magazine stalker comes in and goes through there. But so now it's been a week and a half, and I went there today, and they're all still there. The tomatoes somehow haven't been smushed, but I mean, there's got to be people that walk up, and they're like, the shit people will do to sell a magazine these days. Fucking Golden Girls computer gaming.
That's hilarious.
Can you imagine if someone did buy it, and then the customer service rep gets an email like, my tomatoes were rotten.
I ordered your special issue.
So he did at least take pictures of all these, and you can check those out. But
I want the Golden Girls special.
It was one of those things where, like,
where'd he get a Golden Girls novel?
It's Crispin. He's like a big fan of,
also,
like,
Golden
B.
Girls
Arthur.
Novel. What the fuck is that? How did that product get extended that way?
Well, they had that.
Do not read the comic.
I just can't get enough of that wacky sitcom. I need to read a novel. See what they're up to.
This is, how is that any different than, like, when Chuff buys, you know? Don't go there. Sorry.
Star Wars novels. Say? Oh, you can say it.
But Golden Girls. You know. I mean, at least
we got a someone. I think it was Nick Sutner had the Hulk movie novel.
I mean, what novelization of the movie? Mm-hmm.
There's more pussy in the Golden Girls book. I'll stick to that.
Oh, God. What?
I'm totally kidding, man.
Oh, that's a so wrong comment.
I had the Spaceballs novel back when that was quote unquote popular.
Really?
Yeah. Good.
What?
It was good.
Baseballs.
So you read a book of the Mel
novelization of the Mel Brooks movie.
Wow.
Deco, God, here it comes. I can feel it. This is my favorite joke on the way.
What?
What do you mean you're reading the book?
Oh, yeah. They did ruin a couple of them.
Did they?
Yeah. There was, I think he calls everyone around him shitheads, but in the book they were all idiots. It's like, hey, the little bit of profanity that I glommed onto as a 13-year-old. It's been removed.
It's worth blogging about nowadays.
Yeah. So I still don't get the Golden Girls book, though.
I read the Back to the Future 3 novelization.
See, all these things are like sci-fi, geeky. You sort of get that.
You think other people don't, like, enjoy
it? It's like a bodice ripper version of the Golden Girls, though.
Was it?
Was it?
That's what I was telling, like, you. I read it, man.
So it was like B. Arthur in a, like, a G-string.
Wilford Brimley. He rides through on his horse that he's on the one diabetes commercial. Throws her on the back. Has a bandolier of, like, insulin injectors. Fucking Pancho Villa of diabetes.
Hey, Rue McClanahan got around. So that was her thing, right? That was her character trait. Slut.
She did. She was
a slut.
I'm lying. I don't know who Rue McClanahan
is. Rue McClanahan. She was, like, the wacky one, wasn't she?
You know, she was the slut.
She was the slut.
Yeah. Betty White was the wacky one.
Oh, yeah. So that's right. Way more Golden Girls than ever should have been talked about on this podcast.
I don't know. It I is. Think we can talk about a lot more Golden Girls.
You
remember
think?
The game?
No.
There was no game. Okay, I was going to say.
God, I was getting scared.
Anthony and I played a whack game recently. Actually, it's not that bad. But Nexon, this is come back to Combat Arms, the makers of Maple Story.
They've got Cart Rider.
Yeah, they've got a first-person shooter coming out.
Closed beta just ended.
Yeah.
What's it called?
It's called Combat Arms. It's basically, it's not sci-fi or anything. It's just modern warfare.
Is it anime?
Weapons you use. No.
It kind of looks like Counter-Strike, between Counter-Strike 1 and 2.
Somewhere between CS 1.6 and then Counter-Strike Source. And of course it's on the free-to-play model, and so you have to buy everything that's going to be worth anything, but you don't even get to keep it. You pay for
to use it for a week.
Yeah. So you might, pay 300.
Really?
Yeah, and you get to say you unlock a SAW squad automatic, weapon or something. You can use that then for you can choose to have it for 12 hours. Mm-hmm. You can pay more, but you get a discount for getting it for a full week, or you can pay and get it for a month.
So how much are they charging for these short duration items, did they say yet?
I don't know, because it's all in game points, which you can either buy, but you also earn game points as you're playing.
Oh.
But the funny thing about the game is that it's, it's made in Korea, and the best part, the best thing it has going for it right now is all the voice chat. It's like you hit, the buttons to say something to your team, but it's basically some Korean guy who speaks a little bit of English pretending to be, G.I. Joe, and so...
They're like
inexplicably
canned.
if you're playing the game, you can hit it so your guy goes, "You are the hero," or say if you're setting a charge, you're putting a claymore down, your guy goes, "I'm changing the mine," and it's supposed to be saying he's charging the mine or something, but he's changing it, and then there's like, "That's ridiculous."
You got to get these sound bites for this podcast.
You just play. Yeah, we just spam it the whole time you're playing. Yeah.
Can you
buy better sound bites?
Sean would spawn in and kill everyone and then sit there and spam.
You are a hero. It has that going for it too, because you can. It has sort of an infinite spawn mode, and it also has the Counter-Strike thing, where you basically plant the bomb and you just get a single spawn. So I get in and I got some free bucks to spend. So you just take the heavy machine gun and you just mow everyone down on your team. And then you have, someone on the other team that's your friend do the same to theirs. And then you just both keep saying you are the hero. And then you both go at the bomb and stand and look at each other. And the game can't end because you guys are the ones that are supposed to kill one another or do something. So you just sit there. But it didn't do it most of the time. I don't know. The guys playing with us, they were
hated
a little harder on it. Yeah, I thought it was fun.
I thought it was okay for a free game. If it was on instantaction.com or something, I'd occasionally.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You could just get a dollar for saying that. Instantaction.com.
In-game.
you said it.
Or an in-game dollar. I got an in-game dollar for Combat Arms for saying it, and Anthony got a wall scroll.
They sent me a shotgun.
Guys can't wait for this podcast to be over now.
I got it. I got my gun.
But it's kind of a fun game.
But we've also been playing, or did you already talk about it in the last podcast? Because I wasn't here. Did you talk about Trials?
Yeah, we did.
Trials, you talked plenty about Trials. So we didn't talk about it
again. That sounds hard. Is that the bike game?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everything I read about it made it sound hard.
It's very
difficult.
It's very difficult.
Yeah. I'm not into that.
So what about you guys? We have quite a few news items and stuff. But
we do. We get a lot. Tomorrow I'm going to see your Nexon thing. It just reminded me. I'm seeing the Square Enix free MMO, Concerto Gate.
More free MMOs. Concerto
More
Gate?
Concerto Gate. That's what it's called. Is that right? Concerto Gate. Yeah.
Sounds right.
Which I guess is the sequel to an MMO that's been big over in Japan. Some other gate. I don't know what.
Hellgate.
But anyway, I looked at the screens and it's all big-headed anime girls
anime
frolicking
stuff,
in fields.
Your favorite.
Yeah, so I'm dragging along Alice Liang because I think she's more the target audience. She actually wants to see it, so that means something.
Yeah.
I was about to say, did you just assume Alice wanted to
see it? No. Where's an Asian girl? Someone find me one. No, she volunteered. She wanted to go. Please go. Maybe it'll be good.
Cute
just kind of get the feeling I might not be the demographic for this game.
Maybe.
Just call me wacky.
Concerto Gate.
Yeah.
Is it music-based, or do you have no idea? You're just looking at the pictures right
now? No clue. I'm just looking at these these kids with like 3-inch eyes.
Which, to be fair, it didn't look much different from like Square's Crystal Chronicles. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, their Mana series is really cute. Yeah, there's a whole subset of Square games that have that look. So it's not.
The scary thing is like, I picture people like Alice playing it, and then I also picture like the extreme opposite of that.
Yeah,
like guys with like hardcore beards and the you know FF7 wall scrolls.
Well, when Karen was talking about what's it called, Hello Kitty Online on Legendary Thread, you know, she was talking about how you had to submit a
an application video.
A video application, yeah, because they wanted to see you, you know, because I think partly the concern, I'm sure, was you were going to have these predatory guys in there on Hello Kitty Online. Yeah. You know? So they may need to do that with Concerto Gate. I don't know. Or maybe this is the first, you know, big-headed anime MMO for grown-up guys like us.
Maybe in a few
weeks we're all going to be in here talking about our leveling up strategies. Sean's going to be talking about ganking in Concerto Gate.
The rich PvP environment in Concerto Gate.
Yeah. I just got my Flute of Enchantment, +2. Now I can enchant all the flowers.
So I thought you were going to... Are you going to go... Does that mean you're going to see Spore again tonight?
Yep. I'm off seeing Spore. I blogged about it again today. Yeah, they have yet another event tonight.
We got to stop seeing Spore and start playing Spore.
Yes, indeedy. I'm seeing, what are they showing tonight? I guess the creature editor, which we've kind of seen.
We have in the office.
And have in the office. Yes. Well, Sporepedia went live today.
Yeah.
That was yesterday. That was kind of the big deal with Spore. So that's the online, repository of all the content that users are going to create throughout this game's lifetime, you know, a wiki of content. That you upload your shit, and then anyone can just download it immediately and stick it in their game, and then your game will evolve with that content, which is a cool idea. Right now, there's not a whole lot there yet other than...
Lots of creatures.
Lots of creatures, because that's all that they've released so far.
You'll be putting up an interview you did with Soren Johnson, who's the lead designer now? What's his position?
No, he's not lead designer. I'm not sure of his exact title, so let's
producer
not
or something
ruffle feathers.
So, yeah, some sort of designer.
He's in a very important position on the Spore.
Yeah,
project.
Soren Johnson, if you don't know him, he was the lead designer of Civ 4. Yep. So
I thought he did AI or something like that. That
for
was
Spore?
Job.
That was Could what be. He was ostensibly hired for, and now he's gone on to do a lot more. So
this interview will be going up on Thursday,
if I ever continue to edit it.
But the thing we're talking about is, I mean, you're going to see it again, and like Sean said, I mean, right now it's odd because... You know, when the game was first unveiled, it definitely had this, like, Carl Sagan, Billions and Billions, and the whole, you know, theme music for 2001, A Space Odyssey kind of moment. And then later on, it became more and more about, let's show off the funny creatures that you can make. And we talked about that here before, too, where I said, in the worst-case scenario, it's just one of those books with three leaves that, you know, you combine page one with the feet that are on page 26 and the midsection that's on page 15 to get these different creatures.
That's fun.
And it's like, we know that there's a game to it, but right now we've been looking at this. Yes, we know you can make these funny and quirky and cute animals. And more importantly, they will animate and they'll sort of, you know, spring to life on the screen. But I think we all want it. I mean, how much better would it be if they said, hey, Sean, Jeff, or, you know, whoever, some Ryan, you get to go there. We'll put you on two computers. You get to play whatever sections you want because you can start the game in the Civ stage. You can start it in the spacefaring stage. And you can send, you know, your creations back and forth with one another through the Sporepedia, but you can play. But then just find out what happens. You know, the really interesting things that we were talking about, like, say if you're in a tribal stage and you start to mess with, you know, your neighbors or, you know, you start to influence them, and how exactly does it work? How many options do you have? Or is this just like, is that now sort of like the afterthought to a game that's really just about creating,
right,
basically cute things that are going to survive by being the cutest and being downloaded on those computers?
When they first announced it, my big thing that excited me most was the idea, the evolution idea. Just like the thing I'm doing here in the cellular stage, 7 stages from now, like, what are the repercussions going to be? Mm-hmm. And if it turns out, like, not as many as you thought, then
right. In fact, we know they're having trouble linking all the different sections together. So we don't know how much that feeling is going to carry over. Mm-hmm. You know, every time they show the game to the media, like even this last time we all went for that the big media event, they were careful to have all the different stages at, you know, physically different stages in the building itself. So it's like, okay, now we're all going to walk over here and you'll see the Civ game for a little while. And it was like, wait, I just want to see the whole thing at once. Mm-hmm.
And even then it wasn't to see the Civ game. It was to see the sorts of tribal structures you can create in the Civ game, or in the societal part, the types of buildings and machines that you can create.
And they're also letting you play the game itself. Like, players can play it from any point.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to, you could just start at the city game or whatever. And it does make me worry about the bigger picture. In the interview with Soren Johnson, he actually talks about that even in-house, the sort of, not conflict, but back and forth that, like, the creative folks are having with the more game folks, you know, like, which, how much to tilt one way or the other. Like, is it just this, like, cute creator, or is it a game with a game in it? So,
when's the expected release date again?
September, is it?
That's what I thought. I thought it was.
I think September was the last they said. Yeah,
yeah. So in the in the thread that we had on email before we came in here, I was, you know, using Ashley's stoking the game boner metaphor for this game, and that my feeling here now is that we are in a, you know, semi-flaccid state, or possibly possibly a blue ball state might be the more appropriate one.
Yeah.
Like, there was so much excitement for so long. It's, oh my God, Spore! Oh! And now, like, we've just been waiting and waiting, and it's just like people are just, like, kind of, you know, sore,
right. I mean,
sore
that's,
from
they
waiting.
That's the danger with any protracted, like, announcement to delivery time frame. I mean, like, you got Duke Nukem Forever. Like, who really gives a crap anymore?
Yeah.
There's that, and then there's the other thing about, instead of, you know, ratcheting up the excitement by showing increasingly, you know, fascinating and surprising elements of the game, and then in this case, it worked in almost the opposite direction, where, as I described it, it starts with this potentially infinite possibility, and where you look at it and you just start thinking about, oh God, can I do this? Can I do this? And can I do that? Which is such an excellent way to start to hype your game. And then it's become more and more specific to the point where now we're like, I mean, just like I said, to reiterate that, it just went backwards. I mean, now should be the point where I'm thinking about what happens when I'm going through the universe and seeding these planets. And if I can find the equivalent of my own, you know, past on other planets and stuff like that, instead of like, well, can this thing walk if I put web feet on the front and if I put, like,
you're so right. Like, what if they were releasing assets and information like the way that the game itself is supposed to progress? Like, how cool would that have been if, you know, a year or two ago they were showing these little duck-feeted creatures, but then they were like, oh, and guess what? Now you're going to be able to do this.
Or if they showed it in the little level of stages, right? So
Yeah, like just found out about going to space or something.
Right.
Yeah. And they just kept going through that. But the deal is that, I mean, I think we will see those kind of marketing strategies in the future for games after the success of, you know, Call of Duty 4, where it was like announced, boom, it's coming out. Same thing with Crisis Warhead, which, you know, we'll talk about later.
That's like something Apple, like, they just had the WWDS or whatever. That's something Apple has been doing forever.
Yes.
Pretty much, like, they don't talk about a product until it's literally, like, either on the shelf the day they announce it or a month away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's
they showed
spectacularly for them.
Yeah, we had our edit meeting here yesterday, you know, our weekly meeting, and David Ellis, Game Videos, was not in the meeting. He was outside basically, like, listening live to the announcement about the new iPhone. And he was, like, the star of our meeting, even though he wasn't there, because he kept going to the window and holding up, like, you know, the latest fact he just heard on the radio.
There's something,
$199.
There's something,
I mean,
exciting.
But we were all excited.
There's something exciting about being able to get that thing, to know that,
and
hey, we just
month.
Announced it, and, like, you could, it's actually in the store right now.
Right.
You didn't know about it, but you could go buy
and also,
four
Valve
today.
Did that with Half-Life 2, remember?
I mean, then naturally, because the way that the pace that tech evolves, you know, it's like when I first saw Quake Wars, I was like, wow, this is mind-blowing. And at the time, I was playing Battlefield 2. And then it was like, then that year passed, and 2142 came out, and then another year, and then it came out, it was like, and that, by, at that point, it was like, wow, this game doesn't look as good as a lot of the other stuff that's out now. But you're like, I remember when you first see it.
Yeah.
Like, if this is coming out this holiday season, it's going to just, like, be phenomenal. But, the other side of this, though, is that imagine Will Wright and company would have had a hard time keeping it under wraps for so long, because I think they were so genuinely excited with the direction that they were taking with their game. And you could tell, they like, maybe EA is, you know, maybe someone from EA is listening. They're like, oh, well, we didn't want them to talk about it then. But it was at GDC, you know. Will, like, mm-hmm. really wanted to show other developers and what was going on.
There's something to be said for showing it off and then getting public feedback right away. Mm-hmm. Like, to even know, like, if you're sitting there making this game and you still don't know you have 3 years, to sit there and go, okay, we're not even sure if we're totally on the right track here.
Yeah.
So then they show it, and then people go, wow! And then they're like, oh, good, we're on the right track.
Yeah.
And I think there's something to that feedback system. That, mm-hmm. that's
and there's
important.
No question that they're the EA, I don't know where they're at now in their heads, but certainly even the last time we went to see it, which was, what, a couple months ago, mm-hmm. that they were worried, you know, or they were concerned. You know, they definitely wanted the feedback. That was part of the reason we were all there. Mm-hmm. You know?
They should have let us play it then.
Well, yeah. I still think it could be
I'm
great.
I'm still excited.
I'm still remaining optimistic about it.
Me too.
Yeah, I am too.
And I think, you know, I do think that the Sportpedia shit is key. You know, that's what they should have been talking about more, I think. Mm-hmm. Just the idea that we're all, you know, sharing this big, huge pool of content, and that your content could come in and fuck with my game, I think is such a neat idea.
Another cool way to promote it right now would have been, instead of, like, having people come in and just, you know, make more creatures, which we've already been doing, is to take us around and show us the best sort of, you know, Sportpedias that they have there. Like, they mentioned when we were there last that they had an alphabet menagerie where all the animals
right.
create on letters. They had another. It was kind of based on the Beatles' Yellow Submarine movie. And if they went and showed us that, say, look, here's not like some stuff that people cobble together while having drinks and hanging out with Will Wright over 30 minutes, but these are the things that we've been making over the past year, and these are the ones that have proven sticky, that they're still around, and that they're still, if they show us each of those, that I think that would even be cooler than, like I said, the hoofs on the back and the duck feet on the front.
Scott Sharkey's Penosaurus, mm-hmm. right? I think that went around the office.
Right, that's the... You're going to see a lot of Penosauruses in Sportpedia, I think, come launch day.
Yeah.
It's like, yep, you can make a penis.
and a car that's penis-shaped on it that drives around a penis-shaped continent on a penis-shaped continent. You know, that was like... Yeah, that's what it was.
So. Yeah. Maybe you can even filter your content just for that, for penis world. Yeah. You know?
It was kind of fun flipping through the Sportpedia. I mean, uh-huh. there are a few that, like, in thumbnail form, was like, hey, that's intriguing enough to click on, even though it was kind of all scattershot and wasn't organized in the way Sean was mm-hmm. saying probably would be a good idea.
Right. And then, you know, you can tag that if you see a guy's creature that you do think is cool. Some guy has a neat art design. You can basically, like a podcast, you can subscribe to that guy. So any content that this guy ever makes will automatically get downloaded into your game. I mean, it's a neat experiment, I think, you know. I don't think we want to write it off just yet. I mean, not that any of us are, but yeah. The big key to me, again, is what you're saying, like, are the implications of what Will Wright started out thinking about and doing years ago bearing fruit with this game, or has it devolved into this kind of... Let's all make cute stuff and share it thing.
We will find out some.
And it's weird because, like, you have, like, Little Big Planet for the PS3, which is totally let's make cute stuff and share it. And, like, never has anyone really seen that there might be an inkling of a game, but people are really excited about that mm-hmm. still. Mm-hmm. So, like, maybe by implying that there is this rich, complex game from the beginning, they may have oversold it.
Yeah.
Because the hype, I think, for Little Big Planet probably won't. I think people are more excited for that in some ways.
Well, it was originally like Sim Everything, right?
That's what they said. Yeah,
it was like the working title. That's not biting off too much.
I still will buy it, and I still play it for sure.
What do you think, Ryan? You going to play Spore?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know.
Are you going to make a Lost-themed creature?
Dang, I might. I'll make Dharma Island World. Yeah, I don't know. I was really excited for it for a while, but kind of is going nowhere.
See?
Well, I don't know if it's going nowhere, but
flaccid game boner. Even when I said that there was an event today, to the group yesterday, I was like, oh, who wants to go with me? Plays. Yeah. They got free shuttles.
Well, in our case, free shuttles. Because we just... Actually, you know, it's not even that we just went a couple months ago, but, like, they just sent another round, like, when Scott Sharkey went. This was just, like, what, a couple weeks ago? A week ago?
Yeah.
So now it's like...
Yeah, you got to space these things out, right? So then we get all excited again.
Studios turning into 7-Eleven, you know?
Yeah, you don't want to be...
get a bag of Doritos and season four.
I'll be going to let you play it?
Yeah. Would you like to see Spore again, sir? Not today. How about a lottery ticket?
Are they going to let you play the game tonight?
I don't know. Hmm. I don't know. I'm just hoping for some good crab cakes.
So
and well, maybe and a t-shirt.
Let's let's quit beating the bush with beating the bush. Let's quit beating the horse,
dead horse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Enough Spore.
Enough Spore. We'll be back with some more Spore.
Crisis Warhead was just announced last week.
We didn't get a chance
to talk about that.
Yeah, what is it?
It is sort of like an expansion pack, right? I don't know. It's not clear if it's an
standalone. I think it's standalone.
Okay.
I don't know though.
But basically it follows, I'm looking at the press part here, it follows Sergeant Psycho Sykes and his adventures on the other side of the island during the events of Crisis.
Oh, so it's like a Blue Shift or something.
Or like season two of Lost.
Yeah.
These are like the others.
The tailies.
The tagline is maximum freedom, maximum explosions, and maximum psycho.
What's his name again? Psycho Sykes?
His last name is Sykes.
Psycho Sykes.
How's Sykes spelled?
Like, I don't know.
Wait, is this a character from the first one? I don't remember any of the characters.
Yeah, he's like the Australian guy that you're always dealing with all the time.
It sounds like an MGS name.
It does. Yeah.
They all had weird names like that. Aztec, Psycho.
Well, he was like, dude, Prophet. He's the crazy guy. Let's call him Psycho. Like, it was stupid like that. But I am excited for this for a few different reasons. Well, another bit of information, it's being produced by Crytek's Hungarian studio in Budapest, whereas the Crytek that came out now was from their Frankfurt, formerly Coburg studio in Germany. And they also have a studio in Kiev, I think. So they're getting around.
Global.
It's gonna use an upgraded version of the engine that powers Crysis that we know. And that, you'd be like, whatever. Here's why I'm excited about this. And it's just sort of theoretical right now. But I suspect my whole thing with Crysis 1 was that it was a phenomenal game. I still think it's something that anyone who's remotely interested in shooters needs to play. And it was toward the end. I felt that like the end fell apart, and I thought that there's a lot of sort of like promises that weren't delivered on. And they had this fantastic idea that this island was going to become, you know, frozen over. And early showings, you know, we're talking about, you know, frozen waves and aliens shooting out the surface beneath you so that you'd fall into the water. And just using this, you know, cover, you know, enemies would you take cover, they would flash freeze it and then break the cover, leaving you, you know, exposed again. And none of these things happen. And I suspect that part of this has to do with, like, the minimum specs for the game. Because if they wanted to get the game, basically whatever you determine your minimum spec is going to be the limit. Anything above that is going to just be superficial. It means things can look a lot better, DX10 effects. An example of this is also in Stalker Clear Skies coming out. They have this ability to make sort of like air masses move around objects and stuff. And so they just kind of showed it was like neat where you're walking through some, you know, corroded factory and you see that there's air coming through a vent and it's like cold air. So it's displacing around the objects and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, imagine if they have their equivalent of like their ghosts and invisible enemies and stuff that did appear in the original Stalker, but now you have to track them using air movement and stuff. But of course you can't do that unless your min spec guarantees that everyone will be able to see that. So in Crysis, I think the min spec might have prevented them from doing a lot of the things with the ice that they wanted. And now that they've got this upgraded version of the engine that is able to do things for the same spec, it might give them the chance to go in and do some of the things with the ice that they probably intended to all along. I'm hoping that's the case. I think the sense I also got was that it came out in some of the interviews that Chabot and others at Crytek did after the game's launch that it seemed like it was a case of, well, this game had to come out now. It had to, you know, EA said it had to come out, and, you know, for whatever reasons, and we had to get it out, and that probably meant compromising in a few areas. And now I'm just looking at this as maybe this is their chance to basically do everything they really wanted to without the compromise. It's like another chance to go back And this is a PC only as well, despite, you know, their when Chabot came out and said in the future Crytek will develop for multiple platforms, mm-hmm. not exclusively for PC, but this is doesn't fall under that.
Right. Kind of makes sense that it's still PC exclusive, mm-hmm. I would think. I mean, it's really just a follow-up to the PC game, right?
Yeah.
It would be a weird thing to start on consoles.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I always assumed he was speaking of whatever's next. You know,
the console port will probably just come with both in one package.
Yeah, that could be the case.
The blue box.
Console port, but this is supposed to save PC gaming.
Well, they are, but they've already said, though, that they've been working. That's probably what the Kiev studio is doing or something. Mm.
So this is cool. Like, there's some other things, too, because the way that the game is paced, you can clearly be in another part of the island and have these, like, reference points so you know when you're at. When the mount, well, spoilers, at this point now, like, this is something else, too. I kind of want to talk about spoilers in a minute, but, like, I think we should be able to talk about it, you know, freely. So if you are one of those people who I plan on playing it when I get a new graphics card next year, turn the podcast off right now. For the
Sean is about to spoil Crysis.
I think the statute of limitations is up on this.
Fast forward.
There's an enormous mountain in the center of the island, and it starts to quake and tremble, and then eventually large pieces of it fall off, and it's sort of revealed that it's actually an alien ship or an alien structure inside this mountain. So you could be anywhere on the island and sort of sync up the times by saying this is when that mountain is starting to shake. Mm-hmm. Same thing with when the ice dome flash freezes the entirety of the island. You have that as another fixed point in time where you don't really have to have, you know. And then in addition, the specifics of, like, when maybe someone issued a radio call or when you had a discussion with, you know, Sykes when you were playing the original Crysis, then they can fit all that stuff in. And they could probably have a lot of fun with that in the way that, like you're saying, like Lost has and other shows.
Mm-hmm. And novels and books. Ender's Game and Ender's Shadow come to mind, too. I don't know if you've ever read those ones.
I haven't. Are they worth reading? They come up all the time.
Yeah, I think
Ender's Game, I read the first one. That was fantastic. Yep.
I saw a copy around your office, maybe?
Probably.
If you want to loan it all.
You can grab it.
I'll take it.
It's yours after this podcast.
Okay.
Ender's Game. Go.
So the bitching about spoilers, I mean, I want to get to this at some point in, I don't know, with reviews and stuff specifically, because I think that it just really puts a strict limitation on how we're able to substantiate any of the claims that we make. And that's especially important to me in a review. So for example, if you're, you know, this is going to come up over and over again now with Metal Gear Solid 4 reviews coming out, because no one wants to spoil it, you know, probably rightfully so, because the way that these games are, they're built on, you know, conspiracy after conspiracy, and you don't want to ruin that. But at the same time, I mean, if you're looking at, if you want your review to sort of tell you what you're spending your time and money on rather than what you should spend your time and money on, you have to spoil, I believe. And, you know, when I'm looking at some of the reviews that are out now that are really there, like in the second case, to just tell you to spend your money or not, except they're kind of in trouble this time because they all start with, you already knew, you already pre-ordered this, or you already, it's like, well, what's
so the
going
next
on now?
2,000 words are pointless.
Right, exactly. But they'll make claims like, you know, this story is modeled after the Messiah or something. It's modeled after the story of the Messiah. And then they'll just stop there. And then there's comments kind of hanging there. And it's like, when we read that, we have no reason whatsoever not to suspect that that's the most cockamamie thing in the world, right? I mean, sure, tons of things allude to Christ. Mm-hmm. How many of them get it right, you know? Mm-hmm. Same thing if you're going to be talking about the Matrix movies and the way that they do. You would need to say, here's how they handle it. Here's how the connections link up. Here's how the comparison, you know, fails and stuff. So it's like, without being able to substantiate that in the least bit, because for fear of spoiling things, it's just this empty claim. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, cool. Someone, I have no reason to trust him, you know, thinks that this is a great thing and that this is the story, the retelling of the Messiah story.
Well, for one thing, you know that, like, they probably haven't really thought it through. Chances are in this industry. So,
right,
you know, they didn't do it because they couldn't, or they didn't think it through. They just, you know, there's that. But then also, I think that you can spoil. You just have to be smart about your spoiling, right? I mean, there's just like levels of things and areas where you know not to do it, right? Or, mm-hmm. or maybe I shouldn't say you can spoil. You can sort of talk around a spoiler without.
Right. There are ways to present it so that someone who has played it would know what you're talking about.
Like,
because those are the ones that would this Jesus. You know, if this really was a Christ allegory, they're the ones who played it would be the ones who would like to have that conversation with the reviewer,
right? Mm-hmm. And this was difficult in the same way for games like Portal and BioShock. You know, I mean, more and more we're having games where you can have some sort of, you know, this level of discussion on it that you can't if the game is consists of nothing more than putting dropping blocks in the right positions. Mm-hmm. And
well, right now, go ahead.
I would think, you know, in the case of I reviewed Portal and, you know, in Half-Life 2 episode 2, Sean reviewed BioShock, and I know we both had a hard time saying what we wanted to say without being able to directly substantiate some of our claims. And I think in the future I would love to basically do what I'm saying is criticism. I think in most cases there's you like in film and music, you don't really need to differentiate them. Though, like a good, you know, movie review will be both a review and a critique at the same time. But because of the way that it works in gaming, it's like I almost wish we had some space. Like I was telling Ryan, I want to do a review of Metal Gear, but it's like it's not going to go on the review thing. There's no space for that, you know. And I mentioned to someone else, and they're like, "Oh, you could just blog about it or something." But I'm like, "No, you don't understand. I'm talking about spending a lot more time than someone would spend on a review. I don't want to just blog about it, you know."
Right.
But I want to see a space for that.
Right. I mean,
in gaming,
but I do think you see articles in film. I mean, of course you do, that are, you know, what you're talking about, like an analysis that includes a discussion of the film in its entirety, or maybe even a series of films in their entirety, including spoilers, in which you're talking about, you know, you're talking about the themes discussed, which obviously would include what happened at the end, mm-hmm. or what happened at crucial moments in the film, right? I mean, because that's part of the whole point they're making, that are separate from a review. That are separate from the thing that came out on day one telling you whether to go to the theater or not.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it seems like we should and could be able to do both on this
we
website.
We can. And but there's still, even in the types of, like, even in an Entertainment Weekly review, which is, you know, they tend to be really timely. It's a mm-hmm. yep. magazine because of the magazine's publication schedule. They will do, I think, if you'd compare it to the spoiler threshold for people reading about game reviews, I think they're spoiling a quite a lot, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think you're right. Yeah,
you're right.
They do. Yeah,
but anyway, that's out there. It's me and the spoiler thing getting to the point where I mean, it is hard too because that I understand that. I mean, when you're talking about having a discussion with people about why or what it is that we're spending our time and money on, you have to assume that we've already spent time and money on it. So that limits the audience. And of course, for a game like Metal Gear, I'm in the same position. I don't get to play it yet. I mean, I'm going to mm-hmm. try to get it this week. So but I guess the thing is, here's the other thing, is I think people are only like, if our audience is only looking to read about games in this critical way, like within the first week of its release, before and after, and then when like a month later something comes up, does anyone even care? You know, I mean, do they even care beyond the time thing? Do they just want to look at the score?
Right. I was thinking about that in terms of Grand Theft Auto 4, which, you know, what is it, like off the map already? This thing was like the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Right.
6 weeks ago.
I think a lot. Have any of us finished it?
Oh, God.
I have not.
Other than Anthony,
it.
Who's writing a strategy guide, so that's a different story.
I have not. And now I'm having a hard time going back to it, honestly.
Yeah, I quit when I said I suspected I would back then.
I was enjoying it tremendously, everything I was playing, but I lost the thread there.
Yeah, I lost the thread. I tried picking it up and pretty much spent a play session just like dating people like that were giving me thumbs down and getting the random, you know, I was doing the relationship grind basically. It's like, oh crap, I've got to go date the following three people because otherwise I'm going to lose my taxi privileges. And then I didn't progress anything. And then I was like, that was dumb.
Yeah.
I didn't want to go bowling. I wanted to shoot people.
Well, I've been playing a lot of Mass Effect for the PC, and just on the spoiler thing, I'm really glad that even though this game came out, when did it come out for Xbox?
Probably like a year ago.
I managed.
No.
Not that long ago?
You're kidding me. It just came out this last holiday season.
Yeah, it was like November.
Really?
Yeah. Feels like
six
a year.
6 months or so.
Yeah, it does feel like a year.
I think.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
It just came out this last holiday
season. In game time, it's a year. All right, so half a year. But I between all the previews and everything and the reviews that came out, I managed to avoid all spoilers. And I'm glad now. Because I'm far enough into it, and I started actually really getting into the story, like, much more so than I thought I would, that now I want to know what's going to happen on my own, because I'm now invested in the story. And I would be annoyed if I had read a reviewer's spoiler.
Right, but what about when you're done, though?
When I'm done, of course, yeah. I would totally want it to be discussed.
Because this is the thing. It's yes. not, yeah. I mean, I guess if you established it where you're like, this is what, like, if this is the kind of review or critique that this, you know, and you get people used to that idea, they know to stay away from it until...
Yeah.
Until they've...
Yeah, in fact, when I'm done, then I would like to read something like that.
Right, I mean, you wouldn't go to the standard video game site review then to find that conversation.
You're right, I wouldn't find that conversation. I would find out that it had fluid controls and that the, right. you know...
And that was part of my point. Like, we didn't, not just because we work in a building, but like you said, you didn't read any of your reviews for it. And I read one because someone had pointed it to me for other reasons. For, again, you know, having, just being really odd, having certain things about it. And I won't say anymore. But it's like, yeah, I really don't think that people go to reviews for the purpose that a lot of people who write reviews assume their audience has turned to what they write. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, and that stated purpose is that, we are here to inform consumers and to help educate them on their buying decisions. But, I mean, let's consider that now we've got an era where people download demos all the time. They pre-order games oftentimes before they read any review. So that's sort of like they don't need advice. They've already made their decision. They have discussions on message boards and from, you know, word of mouth with one another that are far more intimate and able to respond directly to one another than whatever Joe Blow, one of us, says on a site if we're just doing some regular thing. Hmm. And I think even when you say, well, yeah, but you're talking about a specific type of person. You're talking about the hardcore gamer. And I think if you go beyond that, I think it still holds true for whoever you imagine, you know, Joe Blow that doesn't do much of anything, you know, as far as, you know, the hardcore stuff. It doesn't go to any websites or anything. I mean, there's just so many ways to make up your mind that I think that it's kind of a reaction. It's kind of like a defense mechanism, you know, like well, even, you know, Jeff Gerstmann of Giant Bomb, formerly of GameSpot, he, you know, he was talking to Stephen Totillo, dropping too many names here at once, but of MTV multiplayer blog, and he was saying, what I do at the end of the day, I look at my job as being to say, can I save people money? That's how I tackle a review. And what I read that was is kind of like this delusion, but the reason it's there is that, well, there was a time when him and people like him and ourselves were kind of these gatekeepers to gaming. Mm-hmm. We were there. We were the ones that had the access, and people would count on us for this. Go ahead and buy it or go ahead and don't. And it's like people don't anymore. And it's kind of like just lying to yourself to make it so you feel like that there's still some merit to what you're doing. And then my response would be to go the other direction. That's why I'm talking about, you know, the critique and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But
I mean, yeah, if you look at any review on a website, the comments are usually people who have played it and either agree or disagree with your review. So obviously,
right,
you know, that's the kind of person you're attracting, or yeah. or they haven't played it, but they're like,
they're agreeing.
I already agree.
Anyway.
This is an A+. So you're an
people
idiot for giving it a C.
A preview with the score, basically.
Yeah, and it's worth. Yeah. That's like a question worth asking then, because people are clearly still reading reviews. That mm-hmm. doesn't mean that the reviews, as we know, are gone. But well, what are they really reading them
well,
for?
Don't you?
I think they're reading it for justification of either
exactly.
a thought that they think they're going to have about the game, or a thought mm-hmm. that they have had about the game.
Because, exactly.
And do you want to be? I mean, then the question is: do you want to be the priest to someone on the internet's personal religion? I mean, if that's what they're looking for, right? They're looking, you know, they're looking right. for the priest for the church or whatever game yeah. X, or the other, or someone to hate it. They're looking for someone to challenge it and say it goes both ways. You know, finally, someone's cutting through the bullshit. You're not sucking this game's dick. You know, I mean, you see that a lot. So that's the terms of the.
So
internet.
I think these conversations you're talking about happen in a way less structured fashion on the internet after mm-hmm. the reviews come out. I mean, there is no place on necessarily 1UP where we can post a post-mortem criticism, which mm-hmm. is kind of what you're talking about here. And this is the conversation you'd want after the fact. Mm-hmm. Like, I wouldn't want to read that before I got the game either.
Oh, yeah, of course.
But I would love to read it after.
Yeah,
there's just,
right.
There's just, we don't have that tag in the CMS.
We don't, but we could.
We could.
Add it to the to-do list on 1UP.com.
This is something I do. It means that I'm going to be chronically late on everything, but that's how it is anyway, right? I mean, we have like other podcasts and stuff, and it's like those are the ones you go to, you know, which is part of the reason why I stepped away from 1UP yours. And there's like nothing. It's just, it was pure, like, I love the guys on the show. All it really has to do with this, the kind of fit. And also, you know, the main thing is just the time and stuff, but the fit is that I think a lot of people tune into that show to get the latest information. And, you know, Garnet and Shane are in a position with their roles in the company where they're always going to see these events. So instead of me going to see, like, the new, you know, Killzone or something, I'll get to go to see some Russian games at 1C once in a while. And it's like, but I will tend to want to like really talk about something thoroughly when I've gotten the chance to do it. But when that time comes, that audience doesn't give a fuck anymore, you know? So.
Well, this is a real, I mean, this realization, well, we, you know, we had the viewpoint section in CGW specifically.
Yes, we did.
I bet this exact conversation is what spawned that.
In fact, it is. Back when, I think we were still CGW, weren't we?
For Viewpoint, yeah.
Yeah, it was one of those experiments that we thought was awesome that ultimately failed. I don't know if it was the execution, if we were ahead of our time, if we were just wrong-headed or whatever, but that was when we dropped the review scores. Mm-hmm. We did no more scores. We said, okay, we're a print magazine in an internet world now. We're late no matter what. In some cases, we're going to be 8 weeks late. Uh-huh. People are way done. So let's have the post-review discussion. Let's have, that's what our, instead of a review, that's what we'll do. Mm-hmm. We'll say, here's what the discussion and reaction was to this game and our thoughts on top of it.
And
we're not going to give you a score.
And it could aggregate, like, the attitudes, you know, and perspectives of other reviewers.
That's what we did.
But what I wanted to, what would have been even cooler to go even more, and we did do some of this, is, like, I had quotes from message boards there, you know, to actually bring in the people that play these games, mm-hmm. not for a quick stretch so they can collect a review check, but that people that are, like, invested in this, mm-hmm. and bring them into that conversation. And so you can have your own, and under that model, you could have your own perspective, but being informed by all these other perspectives. Yeah, I think it was the concept of it, I mean, was pretty fantastic. I mean, it was the kind of thing that you would need to run with for quite some time to develop the results that you want, because it's another way of writing for a lot of people, especially right coming out of review. But I think we could have got there, but we
pushed out.
We pushed out.
We went back to reviews.
Well, the large majority of the feedback was like, they hated it.
They hated it. No, we didn't. I mean, yes, I guess we did puss out. But
and it was probably just because it didn't have a number attached.
Yeah, we were getting overwhelming go back to what you were doing.
I didn't know about that,
both internally and externally.
I didn't know about that because, I mean, I look at our mailbag and I saw both, and I saw a lot of people that seemed to be quite fond of it.
As usual, it all focused on the score, though.
It all focused that they wanted the number.
And either they were on board and understood what we were doing with not having a score.
Then we included scores from other publications, and then they were like, okay, so now you're giving everybody score but your own. Mm-hmm. Why are you holding out on the score for us? Why don't you just add that thing?
That might have been a
problem. How much space does it really take up in your magazine to put a number there? Just give us a number. Okay, so maybe you don't like it, but we do. Mm-hmm. Just tell us. And that was overwhelming. It's all we got, and it was just like, man, all the complaining people do about wanting something deeper and whatever.
Right.
Our response was always like, well, you should read the text. And that a lot of people sort of interpreted that as being sort of pompous.
They thought it was pompous and arrogant. Well, like, there were a lot of, you're too good for numbers. Like,
there were a lot of different challenges there that got compounded, because one solution might have been to, well, we could put a score back, but we don't have to change the methodology behind what we're doing. We could still take into account all these other things that we're taking into account. And so there are different angles of it that got conflated. And then there is a big thing. You have to, like, it did mean for you, Ryan, I don't envy you, it meant month after month explaining what this is and why we're trying to do it. Because, of course, it's not like people are not used to this sort of thing as far as games go. I think if we got to the point where we got it right, you know, when I was talking about I really wanted to review multiple games in a single review, and I thought that like Area 51 Blacksight and Soldier of Fortune Payback and Call of Duty 4 would have worked excellent that way. So I think readers of other non-gaming stuff would look at it and immediately be like comfortable with it. Oh yeah, I'm used to this format or something. But the game thing, it's the TV dinner thing. You know, it's like you got your peas in a compartment, you got your dessert in a compartment, and your Salisbury steak in the other, and you got to eat, like, you're going to eat the Salisbury steak in that compartment. You better eat that, and then you can move on to the peas, and then you can get on the dessert. It's like people are just so used to that you put it like a, you try to put a proper meal in front of them, and they freak the fuck out.
Right. It's like, so product centric rather than like idea centric.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we've got well, it's not really diversion. We're talking about games. This is a gaming podcast.
That's right.
At least we're talking about games.
We're just realizing that these are conversations that we've had probably every
months. We have them all the time. I'm sure people are sick of us bitching about game reviews. But we're sick of writing them, so there you go.
I'm not, you know. I mean,
I'm not.
I'm talking about being absolutely delighted in writing the sorts of things that I'm talking about, you know, and it's kind of this is why it's coming up. This is something I really want to do, you know.
One of the things you said earlier, it's like, it's only like, for a lot of writers, you know, you said it's hard. Not everybody can do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was.
Well, I think everyone can it just takes practice, you know. I mean, it's just like learning to do something differently, maybe.
Right. I think you also need to see examples to understand.
That's key,
how this is done.
Exactly.
Like, I mean, this is how the voice of certain, you know, how reviews are written is
That's right. If you're a young writer and you're trying to break into this biz, mm-hmm. and you go to 95% of the publications, well, how you write a game review is
exactly the
this.
Same.
Right, it's like a 5-paragraph essay in junior high.
When I started here, the first review that I ever turned in, because I used to read a lot of like GameSpot reviews and stuff. And our review editor at the time came back to me and was like, "Do you read a lot of web reviews? Because this is structured exactly like one of these."
Mm-hmm. And he hopefully told you to redo
it. And that single, you know, interaction like taught me quite a lot.
Right.
Because I didn't know, you know, at the time.
Yeah. The other thing is like I think with practice writing, you know, like seminar papers and stuff like that. I mean, if you're used to that kind of thing, which sounds totally boring, but they can be as fun and as, you know, wacky as you want. But it's like the whole trick is knowing that you're never just going to say, well, I'm going to give my 2 cents on this, and as if it's in a vacuum, as though you're going to just pretend that there aren't, like, you know, 10,000 more intelligent people than yourself, more articulate people than yourself who've already voiced their opinions. So what you then do is you take and you survey them, you bring them in, you have a discussion with them, but you still maintain your own point of view. And that's the trick, is that you're not just then summarizing what other people think, but you're distinguishing your own perspective in comparison and contrast with all of these other voices. And that, I think, is a trick that probably takes practice, but I think it's something that everyone can do. Before we go on, I know, Jeff, you got some Conan stuff, but do you want to say something about the NVIDIA execs' comments about the state of PC gaming?
Oh, yeah. Let's see. We grabbed this thing off NeoGAF this afternoon.
And summarize it. Well, no, the source is Ars Technica.
Okay, sorry. Ars Technica, right. It was, I think we got the link from...
Via NeoGAF.
NeoGAF.
Right. So Roy Taylor, NVIDIA's VP of Content Business Development, spoke with Ars Technica's Ben Kuchera, and he had some interesting comments. I mean, some of these are bolded if you want to go through them. And I know we were sort of surprised with a few of them, and...
Right. Right. Let's see.
I can go.
Want to go through it?
He was basically saying that he imagines a future of PC gaming as being the place where console games come to be refined. This is opposed to games originating on PC and then moving to console or being developed simultaneously for all platforms, but kind of like the case like what you're with Mass Effect and Gears of War, where these special editions come out. And he says that, you know, he specifically cites Assassin's Creed and Gears of War, saying that they began on consoles and they became better when they were ported to the PC with features like improved graphics and level editors. And he says that the consoles will basically be the proving ground for titles before they come to PC, which means fewer games will be built from the ground up to take advantage of what the PC can do. And he says, I think that, I mean, that's... Let's stop there.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, that comment itself strikes me as like half bizarre and half retarded. I mean, because, let's start with the low-hanging fruit. Were Gears of War and Assassin's Creed actually better on the PC just because they had a level editor or higher graphics? No. I mean, the fact is, at least I didn't play Assassin's Creed on either. Let's say Gears of War. Gears of War was a better experience on the console because it's a console game. It played better. I did play both. I played them both to completion. Mm-hmm. And I can say unequivocally, in my opinion, that it played much better on the Xbox because it was made to be played with a controller. And so what's better? You know, how do you define – how do you say it's better on the PC just because – I mean, maybe this is what happens when you work in NVIDIA, that you're looking at everything from a graphics point of view as opposed to like a gaming point of view.
Yeah.
But to me, it was a worse experience on the PC. And so just – if you start with just that one piece of that one thing he's saying, then the whole rest of it falls apart. I mean, the console version was a first draft of the game it became on the PC.
Let's look at
the PC was like a mangled version of what was pretty perfect in the first place on the other platform.
Well, let's look at Mass Effect for a second, because that's a game BioWare has made PC role-playing games before, and okay. Mass Effect to me felt very much like all the design was done because they knew it was going to be a console game. So when they bring it mm-hmm. to PC, they do make some good changes.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. at no point do you think this is the game they would have made if they had started on the PC.
Right.
There would have been just some fundamental differences yes. in how things controlled and how things
exactly.
were handled.
I'm really digging Mass Effect on the PC a lot. I really like the tactical overlay that they've added. I don't know if you guys have seen it.
Yeah. I think it's generally really considered cool. better than the Xbox 360
right.
one.
But like you said, there's certain things like the inventory system and stuff like that that I think would be have been totally designed differently if it had started on the PC in the first
yeah,
place.
Yeah, no question.
And it feels kludgy to me. It doesn't feel right.
Mm. Right.
Exactly, on the PC. So I know that's just like one angle of what he's saying, but
some
to me,
cases, I will say something just happened recently where it made me imagine that a console game could come to the PC and I would like it a lot more. And that's Battlefield Bad Company. I can't say much about it yet. We're still waiting for the embargo to come up. But mm-hmm. I do like the multiplayer a lot to the point that the whole time I'm playing, I'm like, God, I wish this was on PC. Mm-hmm. In part because yeah. the Xbox Live environment is not as attractive to me as my Ventrilo environment with my people. And the interface for a shooter like that. But for Gears of War, part of the reason I like that and did play on Xbox Live for quite some time, despite not liking that play space, was because it worked so well with the interface that I never was like, God, I wish I had a controller. I mean, mm-hmm. a mouse and keyboard when I played it. But it was like, yeah, with Battlefield, and it kind of makes sense because DICE, they've made PC shooters for the longest
right.
time. And like, God, if they made this, this would be fantastic. I can imagine playing the hell out of this on PC if they did it.
Right.
So I'm like, there are circumstances where I would definitely.
Are cases where it matters. And I think, like you're saying, I did play a little bit of Mass Effect on the 360. And I couldn't get my head around it at the time. Mostly, weirdly for me, it was like a content thing. Like, when I'm playing my Xbox 360, my head, I want more something like a little more visceral and faster. It's just the space my head is in. So when I started playing it and you get to the Citadel and it slows down for a while there when you're at that place.
Right.
I just was like, this is not what I want to do on this console.
Where's the alt tab for your aim window?
Exactly. And then now on the PC, I'm back in, I'm like in a comfort zone there. Like the slow pace is actually appealing to me. And I'm taking my time and
because
I'm doing all those all the side quests.
Open on the side.
Well, it's true. I can multitask. Yeah. You're not wrong.
Yeah. Those long elevator rides, you can go surf.
So, yeah, I think there are cases. Yeah, God, what is with all the elevators in this game?
That's how they mask loading.
Is it?
Loading.
It's such. It's like the elevator game.
I guarantee that no matter how bad it is on your PC, it was worse on the.
Really?
Box. Yeah, it was.
If you watch
horrible.
My YouTube, it was called Mask Effect.
I am liking it a lot, but a little less elevator time would be great. Thanks. Yeah, this one, his quote here. Taylor's quote, that's something that people need to get their heads around. The PC is going to be an improved version. You know, it's just like, why do I have to get my head around that? You're wrong. Like, in some cases, maybe. You can't make a blanket statement like
right.
that. In some cases, the console version's always going to be better.
Yeah.
Always.
Every Capcom.
Because it was a console game.
I was about to say,
every Capcom
Resident Evil 4,
game. Yeah, Resident Evil 4, Lost Planet.
Look at how definitive a statement that is, too, though, when he says, today, developing a PC game means starting on a console. Now, for a spokesperson for NVIDIA to be saying this, because the graphics, you know, the chip makers and stuff
yeah.
are traditionally the most defensive.
Yes.
They're the ones that form, you know, the PC gaming alliances and stuff, and they're the ones that are always to say, you know, like in this case, Rob did, you know, send me a message after I first published the Battlefield Heroes story, and I was talking about, you know, Crysis sales, and he was, you know, really defensive, wanted to remind me that, well, you know, Crysis is now, as time has gone on, is selling really well.
Mm-hmm.
And so for him to be making this statement, it is kind of alarming, but at the same time, it doesn't address... I was like, well, Battlefield Heroes, that kind of game.
Right.
Or the wonderful, was it Gaia Online? What did you say it was?
What? Gaia Online?
No, your gate, something gate.
Concerto gate.
Concerto gate. Sorry. Well, that kind of game.
Let's not mock this game. It could be great.
Yeah, but there are still games that developing a PC game means developing a PC game.
Of course it does.
And beyond that, too, like I just went to this 1C event last week, and they showed, you know, they had like 8 or 9 PC games, and while they were also announcing that they had some console games, they were definitely about putting a bunch of new product on PC.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So even if it's not North American's, you know, premier studios that are making just for, there's still places in the world that are.
All right, and there still are.
And there's still entire genres that are, I mean, God, we don't have to have the defend is PC gaming.
Yeah, it's not.
But it's like this representative like for NVIDIA actually started to like drink the Kool-Aid, you know, a little bit. This other comment here, I quote, I think we have to face the facts. The value of consoles is such that no one is going to make a PC-exclusive game in the future. Why would they? Why would they ignore consoles?
What happened is
again,
the discussion. It went from like, your girl is fat, yo. It's like, dude, she's not fat. She's not fat. Your girl is fat, yo. My girl's got big titties. Like that's what eventually happened. And hence the expanded content.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is better. My girlfriend's the enhanced version.
Yeah,
of your girlfriend.
Plus, now with silicon.
So, yeah.
Unless they don't use that anymore. They use saline.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just the blanket nature of that statement is what's bothering me. It's just like, okay, yes, certain types of games will probably now be generated on the console first, but there's whole genres and
if there's a Civ,
studios.
If there's a Civilization 5, if, I'm not saying when, Firaxis is not going to be designing this thing on the consoles and then porting it to PC. They will make that game on the PC to run on PCs. I guarantee you. Mm. Blizzard's next game is going to get designed on the PC.
Why would they ignore consoles, though?
Right.
Tell me, Jeff. This doesn't make any sense.
Ask him.
Well, this is the case, actually. Yeah, StarCraft II is being designed for console, and the PC one's going to have extra stuff. Half-Life Episode 3 is also being designed for console, and we'll have a few PC bonuses.
Right. Oh, and these are exclusive scoops, by the way.
Yeah, so we're announcing this now. Yeah. So, yeah, of course, the other thing here is that
it's
ignoring Blizzard and Valve and other studios as well, even if, you know, Valve is making...
Right, and how can you ignore Valve and Blizzard?
If you want to
even making PC game statements.
Yeah, it's not a case that Team Fortress was developed for console and it just happens to have all the real red stuff on PC right now.
Right.
It was developed for PC, it has all the red stuff on PC, and it happens to also be on console. I mean, so it's not...
They will go both directions for a long time in the future. And some mistakes and stuff.
Indeed.
True debt. Quick note, PsyOps MindGate conspiracies on File Planet for free. I wrote that down just because I was talking about it a week or so ago. It's a pretty fun game.
Is it?
It's a fun game.
Fun game?
So are you guys still playing Conan?
Yeah. I have a quick Conan announcement to make too.
Oh yeah.
Have an announcement?
Let's hit this up. This is important.
It's not important to anybody here.
You gotta pay the kids need
just
to pay their dues.
Everyone that's members of Peen Orange.
Uh oh.
We have our guild city.
Woohoo!
And, right now, all we have is the keep in like three walls that aren't completed.
Three walls?
Yeah, because you have to build.
Doesn't help you, doesn't
so
it?
You
that
build,
doesn't do much good.
Yeah. You got one wall?
So it's like a gold and a half per section of wall. And so you build an outer keep wall, and then you build all your buildings, like stores, and then you have to build the. Or no, you were building an inner keep wall, you build your buildings, then you have to have an outer keep wall. But all this shit cannot happen without everyone contributing.
Uh-oh. So you're here to collect money?
Next time you're on, get in guild chat and say, who can I give money to for the guild thing?
Shit, this is fucking extortion. I'm in Peen
Orange. I'm not even saying it has to be a lot.
All I've got is a bunch of tin.
At tin goes a long way when it's everyone, though.
Yeah. Shit.
You need to donate, man.
Fuck this game.
But Rory actually...
What do I get out of paying my taxes? What do I get?
Get a wall, plate, Jeff.
Three walls? That's
within.
Not going to keep out the barbarians.
No,
and
wolves?
And actually, our keep is like... You can see from the top of our keep
really?
Another keep in the distance.
Damn. So wait, seriously, what do we get? What do I get if I pay taxes? What do I get in the keep?
You get our protection for one, and you've needed it. You just have failed to request it. When you were in White Sands, you were getting your ass beat over
yeah,
and
no
over
kidding.
Again. Yeah, it's protection money. You could have summoned. You said you could have said,
you got a nice family
Peen
there,
Orange.
Jeff. It'd be a shame if anything happened to him.
You could have said, Peen Orange Clan, this is Jeffrey Green.
Exactly.
I am in White Sands getting the shit beat out of me.
Uh-huh.
Assemble, and you would have had so many dudes there to help help you out.
All right,
then you would have been the one beating the shit out of
people. Okay, I get that part, But what about the keep, though?
So you got to pay for that.
So well, keeps, I can see paying for protection, keeps, but what about the like, keep?
That's what the money goes towards is the keep.
Yeah, and we have,
but what do I do in the keep?
We have
why do I want
you
to don't there?
You stay alive. We chill in the keep. Well, watch DVDs.
Until they're called upon.
I forgot. There is things you can do with the keep that are totally, like, in the long term, like, beneficial to everyone. Like, you get special powers when your keep reaches a certain level, like everyone in the guild does or something like that, mm-hmm. is what I was told.
But is it like a, so it's a physical, it's a place in
it
space
is a place. You, like,
that you would go to.
You can,
I could go there now and when, I could yeah, you can go there right behind now. The when three walls.
Whenever you're traveling, like on one of those things that's like, take the boat to this place,
okay.
there'll be a thing that says travel to guild city, and uh-huh. you can just instant travel to your guild city.
We can dance in there.
And leave your friends behind. Chill.
Like, it's a place to call our own, and we'll eventually have to fight it.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll fight
we to defend it.
Because other
people can
other
take
fools,
it over.
Yeah, like, well, Anthony's job, so while you have to pay, like, people last week flung a rotted cow corpse that had bubonic plague into our keep, and Anthony's job is to run around between the internal gate and the external gate and fling the cows back
and
over.
Clean up.
Does this so he doesn't have to pay the tin. So you need to pay the tin so we could pay Anthony to get rid of the corpses that don't exist because I'm making it up.
No, but the thing is that, like,
that sounded
like,
awesome.
Cool. Yeah.
There are things like if you make your keep doesn't have to be open to attack. But if you make your keep open to attack, you earn income for your keep doing that.
So can your keep get destroyed?
Yeah.
Yes.
So if we made our keep like vulnerable to attack like Monday through Friday,
we get more money.
We would get a ton of money. Whereas if we made it only like attackable on Wednesday nights, it wouldn't be.
So then are we going to need a dude sitting there like Locke with the numbers, like punching him in? Basically, so the guild never.
Basically, we need someone
that's
sitting
Anthony,
on.
But your tin goes to paying him.
We
to
need
do
someone
that.
Sitting on the keep just being like, I can see people.
Anthony
assemble.
Up at 3 in the morning with his pillow and his hair.
Blow the horn like the Ricola guy. Do Ricola. And then all of a sudden, like, everyone just like ports to our town and gets ready to fight.
If the guild gets. If the thing gets the keep gets destroyed, it's like gone.
We have
like
to
the money
it.
I donated is like it, fucked.
Yes.
Oh, I'm so not paying.
You gotta make a macro that texts everybody's cell phones when they're.
I'm not paying unless my investment is guaranteed.
Dude, if
I'm
gonna talk to my lawyer.
You gotta get
burger and
I get blackberry.
I need
insurance.
It's gonna be gone.
I need to talk to my lawyers.
All right.
Yeah, you gotta get everyone hooked up with blackberries.
But you do need to. I say let's change this right now. Let's say your character name. You are on the Tyranny PvP server.
I'm on the Tyranny PvP server. I'm Lummox. I don't mind saying.
And that's Lummox.
Yeah,
and I'm
Lummox.
Saying this because I don't want you to be in these positions where you've just been playing solo.
Well,
you've been
I
playing
have.
This game on your own.
I'm level 20 now. I'm out in the world.
See, that was the other thing.
I finished Tortage.
So the only reason that there's been other players in this world is just to beat you down.
But I only got beat down a couple times. I got beat down a couple times in the, you know, the under.
You need to feel what it's
halls,
like to do the beaten, though. It's liberating.
It's a game. It's built
well, I've
on
beat a couple of guys
the premise and a fiction about being a brutal warlord. And the purpose in life, as Conan said, you know, and which was adapted
that's
from.
That's King Conan to
from,
you.
Genghis Khan. Is to basically to beat fools down.
Okay, but here's the thing. I played through the first 20 levels, the Tortage stuff, a lot of the nighttime stuff, which, you know, people have been up and down on. I actually ended up enjoying it. I did. I liked the solo. I mean, it's not the world's greatest story or anything, and there's a lot of...
I still haven't read a line
there's,
of
there's a lot of FedEx. I've done more skipping in the later...
I read a lot of it until they made me feel bad.
About yourself.
Yeah.
I read it.
Yeah. No, I read most of it. I mean, it was fine. But
lore.
Then once I sailed off to my homeland and then got faced with like 25 new exclamation points from all the NPCs in front of me, it was like my soul just got sucked away. I just like looked at all those people and logged off. I was like, oh no, I don't want to fetch all your shit.
Yeah.
I'm done now. And
see,
then,
this is the difference. Like when I got to 20 and I got out of Tortage, I didn't go to my homeland at all. I immediately went. I followed Rory and Duncan, and they took me to a whole nother area. And there were fewer items. This is what, Kemi? No, not
Wildlands is a lot.
Not Wildlands. The desert one.
Kemi? Kemi?
Yeah.
Kupsef Province?
Yeah, Kupsef Province. So we just went out there, and there are fewer things to do. But basically, The first act is like, let's just start killing people that are like turning in the quest. So you don't want to be the guy who's like, oh shit, there's 20 exclamations. I got to go get them all. You want to be the guy that's like killing the dude who's
looking at the exclamation points.
Yeah. And that makes there's all the difference in the world in this game.
Right.
Well, and that makes the difference. That's not Conan what you're doing. It's not Peen Orange and it's not Conan.
I'm not living the Peen Orange life. It's you know, I saw some guys arguing in the Peen Orange guild chat. It was great. I had just logged on. I logged on right in the middle of an argument because as soon as I logged on, you know, the green text I see just up on the screen like, you fucking douche. Nice. Fuck you. And then, you know, I was like, oh, wow. What's this about? It turns out that one dude in the guild like ganked another dude in the guild. And he's like, didn't you even see my fucking tag?
That was yesterday.
Oh, no, this was a couple days ago.
Oh, okay. So I guess same thing happened to Duncan.
But that ain't Peen Orange.
But it made me think offline, like, maybe that is Peen Orange.
That is Peen Orange.
Yeah, maybe Peen Orange does not discriminate amongst.
I remember one time Sean saved some guy that was being attacked by mobs and running. And Rory was like, what the fuck are you doing, Sean?
Yeah, this is...
That is not Peen Orange. Oh, did you?
Yeah, I told the story. I just did it.
I just pulled a Jeff, exactly.
Yeah. this is actually the story I'm alluding to. No, but I also had things where, you know, I'll run into people in our guild and they'll hide from me because they expect me to try to kill them or something. But
is that kosher? Seriously.
No, I don't do
that. Is it a Peen Orange rule? Kill somebody else in Peen Orange and not...
Peen Orange has gotten so, like... indiscriminate. I think I don't handle it. Like, most people don't even know who I'm in. I'm on there. I was on the weekend. No one ever says hi or anything.
Obesia.
And I ask people, are there any like level 30-ish people who want to do, you know, the pyramid or the Black Castle or something? No one ever responds. And I think they just got a bunch of people in there. And you ask me, like, well, how did you get in here? And they're like, well, we just heard this is a good ganking guild or something. So it's not like podcast listeners and stuff. And they routinely started kicking people out for grave sins, such as saying, you know, for the win, and what is it, QQ?
QQ.
Yeah, I mean, any of that.
Oh, I heard that discussion. Yeah, QQ is an automatic.
Wow.
Those are grave sins.
Yeah, and so someone the other day was like, we just were looking in the chat, and we see, like, in Guild Green, like, I've got more PvP in my little finger than you've got in your entire body. It was like, man. Like, I don't want to read that shit, dude. That's how Peen Orange
did. Everybody invent rules like the Ruthless Overlord.
That's awesome.
Give us your money and shut the fuck up.
Well, it's someone bragging about their PvP. Like, for one, you don't talk to other people in the guild like some kind of dumbass. And then, like, the moment it goes to your head and you think that, like, your stupid-ass Conan character.
Yeah, that's definitely always my favorite part of all MMO chat. Like, the OOC chat in Conan is worse than Baron's chat in WoW.
Oh, God.
And it's just all these guys, like, yeah, doing the E-peen thing with their... And it's like, do you realize what you're doing here?
No.
Yeah. It's just so ridiculous. Yeah. And there's a lot of... What I find amusing is, like, there's so much WoW hate. You know, there's so much like, oh, this game's a million times better than WoW.
WoW is actually a forbidden topic in our guild.
Right, but it's like, do you know how much this game actually owes to WoW? This game wouldn't be here without WoW. Three-fourths of the design is WoW, you know?
Lotro was the same way.
Lotro's the same way, and the attitude was the same way. That drove me nuts in Lotro. Like, oh, yeah, sure, go back to your kitty game. We're playing Lord of the Rings Online.
I'm going to go as a hobbit.
Yeah.
Go to your Care Bear game.
Yeah.
Hey.
Oi. Boy.
So that even like Rory and Matt and James and Duncan get caught up in that. Like, I've seen them, like, they've done the same as anyone. Like, if they get beat, they're like, dude, I'm getting my alt. And you're like, come on, like, let's just do this quest. And like, you can't talk them out of it. They got to go prove that they've got like a bigger gun somewhere in their gun closet, even though you caught them out in the yard with the 38 special. They do have an elephant rifle in their closet, and they'll bring it out.
I mean, you understand the need for revenge.
Welcome
right?
to play any MMO ever.
I know. Like, the other thing about this, the thing that's disturbing me most about the game, and I suspect it's probably, you know, common to all MMOs, is that like we can't play together. I mean, there's kind of like a caste system based on your levels. And while you can apprentice people and stuff, it just doesn't work. Like, so if someone's like three or four levels above me, they don't want to play with me or I don't want to play with them because I'm not going to get the XP doing the stuff that I would normally do. People under me don't want to do it. Same thing when you apprentice them, then it's just feels like more bullshit. And it's like the whole thing is just to rank up. And the best ways to do it is never to play with people that are outside of your cast.
Yeah.
And the only reason I play the game is because I want to play with other people. And
right.
So like everyone in our guild, the people whose names I keep mentioning, they've got like three and four characters now. And And like they'll pass. Like I just got to 34, and they made these new characters because it turns out that the Tempest is set, and Priest and Mitra are like radically overpowered, and they've proven that now. But they hit like 30 in like an afternoon. Sure. It's like, what? You're on your fourth build, and like you're now like you can quest with me on my main, and
we're all nodding knowingly around Sean. Yep.
Yeah, like welcome to MMOs. But that's if this is a problem, I mean, isn't this like saying like you go into someone's house and you're like, dude, there's a piece of shit in your living room, and everyone's like, yep.
Well, what we the have fuck? That in our living
How
room
do
too.
We get rid of it, dude? You know, we like why hasn't someone? I mean, I want to be able to play with all of my friends and have it still work out, even though they might be, you know, higher level or lower level. Like just like we haven't played with
that.
You. You're alone
right.
because we're like.
Right,
you can't.
I'm level 20.
Yeah, and it's fucking stupid. That's what's going
to
make me not play.
Play more.
I could man up and play more, but I like I said, I hit level 20, and then I just had this like sort of existential like, oh, yeah,
the existential. Oh.
I don't really know how the
80 more exclamation marks. Well, log off. Yeah,
I don't really know how they could take care of that though. Like an effective way to let people always group together or something. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I think the problem is finding a gameplay incentive to do that.
Yeah.
Don't make people have to level up.
Yeah.
Think of some other way that people can make some.
I haven't been playing MMOs long enough to suggest my own, like, maybe suggestion, but I'm sure something. There's got to be a way around it. We don't have to live with that turret in our living room.
Yeah, you buy a level 60 character off of eBay. Yeah. Pay real dollars for it.
I mean, that's what every MMO is because that's what every MMO is. Like, because
that's what we want. If I can't level up, what else am I going to do?
I don't know.
Well, I think that if there weren't levels there, though, yeah, because like that's all anyone's playing
Which
for.
Which is, it should be noted that on the top of like the recent additions to like yesterday's patch to Conan was we have now added a level sound for whenever you level
up. Oh, yeah.
After popular demand.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, that's right, because it didn't ding before.
I gotta they got me in a good trick. I don't know if you've been to this area. It's outside of the pyramid. It's called like the Treasury of something, some bullshit. Like when I say I don't read this game, I don't read it. I don't
Treasury
even,
of some
not
bullshit.
The dialogue. I don't even read the name of the places I'm going. But I go in there and they're like, okay, after we kill this boss, see these vines on the wall, you climb up there, and that's where like we already did it, but you get, you know, there's usually some good like build specific, I mean, like class specific armor or weapon for you. So I climb this fucking thing and like I fall through the world in like some void. Just like
nice.
Flailing, and then they're all just laughing. Like, well, I guess like they did it to everyone. Like, that's just this thing in this game.
They know
it's
there's
been,
the void there.
Been bugged from day one, and so now you get me all excited.
But it's still got the you can climb here message.
Kind of reminded me, actually.
You can climb here.
My dad, like he... When I was really little, he came back. He works in auto body, and he comes back in this trunk of this beater, and he's like, "Man, I got something for you in the trunk." And he opens the trunk, and there's like it's just like a paint can. Like, I was all excited, like, you know, whatever. Dad brought me something, and he puts a screwdriver to it and pops the thing, and like a giant ass tarantula comes out.
Oh my god!
Like, I was so scared. I was terrified, and I ran.
Was what he is really that giving nice dad. To you as a present?
Like, or was he trying
for you to take
you.
Care of now?
He was
or is
fucking
he...
with me.
He was fucking with you?
He was griefing me.
Right. And then you grew up to be a canker. So what happened?
That's why I did.
The roots of Sean Elliott.
I thought of this song of like, have I tapped all the possible connections of farting in video games? But I haven't, because there's one more that came to mind, and that was like one time when we were at, I was at Blockbuster Video, and you know how there's like racks on the very bottom and they'll have video games down there? But you have to, like, get down on your knees to read this stuff. So there's this little kid, and he was, like, down there looking at the box for the game. So I just, like, stood right next to him like I was getting something, and it turned as though, oh, we're going to read. And then my ass was in his face, and I ripped, like, a terror fart on him. Just like a...
You farted on a little kid?
Yeah, and then he fell back. The rad thing, though, is that he, like, fell back and caught him. He, like, caught himself with his hand from falling all the way over, and then, like, looked up, like, his eyes were just, like... Why did
what
you do that?
What kind of a monster are you?
Yeah, what are you
a little kid.
Why did you do that?
Age wasn't, limit to that.
Wasn't this just like last week?
No, that wasn't like right after high school.
You're now a disciple of Nurgle.
I was, dude. I ranked, man. Ranking, that's what I get in trouble for that. I guess it's leveling, but I always say I ranked because it's like that's what I'm used to saying in Battlefield and stuff. But I ranked in my Nurgledom when I told that story.
Hey, Rory told me that the developers are already fixing like popular griefing tactics and such.
Oh, is that right?
like there was some zone, I forget what it was, but he told me that there was some zone where they would mess with people and they made it like an instant zone.
Already?
Because too many people were complaining about it.
Supposedly, I thought I was talking to Rory last night, and they do like two patches a week, so they're just
they're saying
like crazy
two patches a week right now. Yeah. Wow. They said they're going to slow down, obviously, when they can. Mm-hmm. I did find it interesting and kind of pleasant, even if I was the Genki, that even in Tortage, in sort of noob area, once you get out of the city, I was surprised. You could be doing those quests and you could still get ganked. I mean, I thought that was, you know, pretty, not hardcore of them, but, you know, just a good decision to sort of make you have to deal with that right away.
Yeah, you have to roll with with your click.
I think that's the way to differentiate themselves, yeah.
Yeah,
that's the other thing. We'll institute a pink orange tax and then like a mandatory handholding, like babysitting Jeff to keep him in. Like this
welcome
is the risk.
The
like, you're at the point where you're about to uninstall. You sound like you're maybe like a day away from an uninstall.
So, not an uninstall, but no.
So okay, pink orange, if you want Jeff around, you're gonna have to like babysit him. Like
fuck,
you
need that isn't gonna keep me
seek
in.
Seek him out in the world.
Get the fuck away from me.
Jeff. You need to bring Jeff.
You can have minions.
Gifts.
And I don't want minions. I don't. That's why I have to create alts, so that I don't get minions.
There's a keep to be built, Jeff.
Yeah. That was what I know we have to stop soon. I was going to ask, this keep thing, like, so you just spend the money and then it shows up, or like, do you see it being built? Do you have to get, like, lobies out there to, like, actually build the
wall? Fall
from
the sky?
I'm not sure.
Like, do I have to go over there and pick up a hammer?
Right now, if you go look at our gift city, our wall has four towers. A section of wall, and then the beginnings of a wall. So maybe it does have to be built. Hmm. I don't know.
We're also
you have to
realizing...
like roll a builder class and like just hammer for 12 hours.
I
we
wish.
Need more builders.
That's Star Wars.
Oh, yeah, Star Wars.
Yeah. Well, you also realize, Anthony, that we basically just like advertised it so for people to come and destroy.
Oh yeah, that's going to be a point of honor now.
We need. We need
a second.
Honestly, I did not realize that until you said that.
Does your city like then show up on a map as like Pink Orange's city?
And can it be orange? Are the walls pink orange?
No.
they're the same white.
Does it have
a
name, or is it just like named after
someone comes by? Oh, yeah. I wish I could live in a pumpkin, too.
I hate you.
Does it have a name? Is it, you know,
yeah, could you
Castle
call it, like, New Pulse or something? Or
no, I don't know if it has a name. I don't think so. We can't even put up, like, badass tags in the walls or something. It'll be like...
spray tags.
Yeah, I was thinking
see, that would be
shit.
So awesome, because imagine like the Something Awful Goons would have like the raddest town in the whole game,
right?
Like, you know, it would just be the most. They'd have like For My Wife WMD playing nonstop.
Yeah, that,
right, in Yield Theater.
Second Life, let's play that.
Well, they definitely do seem to police this much less than WoW, say, in terms of that kind of stuff.
Sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm not done.
Well,
yet.
They got, what was the shit where like they Rory got like a GM after him? The funny things about GMs in this game, or maybe it's the thing about GMs in every game. You guys once again have to inform me in my
yes, Sean,
ways, is that they're physically like twice the man of anyone else. Like they're like,
oh, their models are bigger?
They're giants.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
They're like titans.
Oh,
and you
cool.
See them, like, they're, it's like, you know, the swinging dick just came swinging through, you know? Like, they...
stop, you!
Yeah. And they act like they totally, like, ego trip and stuff. I saw them pasting some screenshots of them messing with one, and because they were just trying to, like, cause, you know, mayhem, and the GM eventually came in to try to sort things out. And he, you could just see in the text, he was like, I'm here. Like, all, you know.
Yeah. In EverQuest, they were like the Neo from The Matrix. They could do anything they wanted. Create items, get rid of items.
They do that like, in WoW, too.
They used
all
to,
have
like,
power.
My friend had an awesome day when, like, a GM was like, I'm going to show you the world. And just transported him to all these places that he could never reach. And he's like, we're going to go see a dragon. And they just go see a dragon.
Ghost of Christmas Past.
Yeah.
That's usually what they end up doing, like, near the end of a game's life.
Yeah.
Is he a late player?
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's what they do when they're like, oh, new person, come look at the cool stuff.
Yeah. It's like a sales pitch. Yeah,
totally.
So, like, you go to the car lot and you know, both you and the dealer know that you're going to get that pinot that's on a cinder block out in the front. That's not going to stop him from showing you, like, the fucking Winnebago. Yeah.
All right, well, back to your rat killing.
Yeah, they
get to this other stuff.
Oh,
later.
I didn't print out the thing. I linked to it on the podcast where we had that the Asheron's Call 2, or not 2, that's dead. Asheron's Call 1, they're about to release patch 100.
Also, for EverQuest, they just did this thing where if you were a player in the last 9 years of the original EverQuest, you can play until like July 6th for free and download the game and all the expansions and just restart right. for free.
Really? I thought that was amusing, though, that the time that you were allowed to play for free was so small.
Right.
Like, okay, if I haven't played in 9 years and you really want me to come back, don't give me 2 weeks.
I guess the thing is that you'd come back and see, like, hey, we've added
see what you
maps
missed.
And all these
it's like
things.
A class
like
reunion, MMO
now.
Class reunion.
I do. I really do salute all, you know, snarkiness aside. The MMOs that can last that long and still have a player population, right on. I think that that's cool. I mean, I went to the – I followed all the links from the Asheron's Call patch 100 thing to the Asheron's Call forums where people are talking about what might come up in this patch. And it was like – it was amazing to me. My gut instinct, of course, was first to want to make fun of them all. It's like, wow, you're on a message board forum for Asheron's Call. And, you know, and some of the posts are like, we're talking about patch 100. Think about how many patches that is. And you got people speculating what's in it, and people are writing, like, I hope there's new quests. Like, 100 patches later, that's what your ambition is?
I tend to
you
visualize.
Hope there's new quests. But then, I don't know, they have a nice community there.
Yeah, I tend to visualize themselves. Metaphors as I'm hearing things. In this case, I imagine, like, a society of people that live around, like, a trash dump, and that this is, like, they know that, like, you know, New Year's is coming, or the day after Christmas is coming. So there's going to be like this big, there's a sudden bounty, and they're all speculating on, you know, like what's going to.
The rich people are going to give us their leftovers. Yeah, <dude. laughs> I wonder if we'll get some meat bones.
Yeah, dude. Like, or, you know, like maybe someone returned a broken RC car to Radio Shack, so Radio Shack's just going to throw it out. Maybe they'll get that car with like three wheels. I don't, this is a metaphor. I don't mean this is real poverty. I mean, this is a fictional universe where it's in another, like a Dante and sphere below.
You just made them so sad, though. So sad, sad.
All the Asheron's Call players listening to us.
Yeah.
It's interesting that this has outlasted Asheron's Call 2 by so long.
Yeah.
EverQuest as well. EverQuest 2 didn't do.
That's right.
That's still around.
Neither.
It is, but I'm saying, like, I still think EverQuest 1 probably has a higher player base.
I think so, too.
Vanguard hit its million subscriber this past week.
It did?
No,
it didn't.
No. Sean said it.
Sean's being a peanut.
Man, every time.
You're so gullible.
Charlie Brown is a football here. do they have 1,000? I don't know. Yeah, we're going to hear about it now.
As a matter of fact, Vanguard has 60,302.
Is that a gnome speaking from Vanguard?
Yeah, I don't know.
So you want to take a break and then talk about 1C?
Yeah, is it a break or are we ending?
Let's take no breaks.
Okay, we're going to take no breaks because
3 minutes, but
yeah, we have 3 minutes, but Sean, we want to hear your 1C.
Hey, wait, when?
Do it 3 minutes.
Anthony was there.
One thing.
Oh, he was?
We were talking about Age of Conan.
Yes, sir.
I urge everyone to go read Rory Mannion's Age of Conan review.
Yes.
It's a very good review.
Excellent review.
Yeah. Why are we looking at the clock? We haven't even got to the Lost Talk. Ryan's been sitting on that forever.
Well, because I got to be at the Spore thing.
Do you really,
though? In less than an hour, yeah.
I could come back to the... I mean, I don't want to just ignore the 1C thing because the fact of the matter is that you have, like I said, publisher that's showing like 8 PC games. One, I'm padding the numbers because they didn't show, but they are also working on Battle of Britain, Storm of War, which is the official sequel to IL-2 Sturmovik. Mm-hmm. Not to be confused with IL-2 Sturmovik, Birds of Prey, which is sort of a consolized take on IL-2 Sturmovik that looks much more in line with what Storm of War, the next PC game, is going to come out with, but actually uses the simulation models and stuff from IL-2, which is to say it's fucking fantastic. It's just that Storm of War is going to go to insane extent to model weather and, I mean, like everything from like wind to clouds to like every single component inside the interior of your plane, so that when it's not just some randomized, you got clipped with a bullet, we're just going to pretend that this aileron is like stuck or that your fuel tank, and, you know, we'll determine that if it's self-sealing or whatever, like it's actually going to pass through the plane and calculate what's going to happen when you're shot there, which sounds like a whole lot of a way to talk about dying in a game, but
yeah, yeah.
It's important, and to people that are into that, because I mean, in real life, people have flown and landed planes with tails missing and all sorts of insane stuff. So yeah, it's not game over just because you do get shot. And for people that like Sims, that stuff is cool,
right?
And the bragging rights, you're doing multiplayer, right? And say, I mean, whatever horrendous damage you've had to your vehicle, and you still manage to win.
Be mm-hmm. a good video to save.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Sean, another plug I want up is you wrote up this your impressions of this event, mm-hmm. also on 1UP.com and the PC Front Door.
Yeah.
And that was an excellent story.
Thanks. So that'll save me from having to go through it all over again. Like, just please, like, if you're even slightly interested, go and check out that story, and we'll talk about, you know, I'm trying to get, like, for a hands-on, I talk about a game called Cryostasis in there. I'll quickly say something about that, because it's pretty interesting. Well, a lot of the games there, like, I don't know, they have a lot of Sims and stuff, which I think is fantastic. They're keeping that alive. And then this other kind of game, which I put into a category, and that's, like the equivalent of like black metal, you know, that comes from Norway and Poland and Scandinavian countries and stuff, where it's like ages ago, metal went over, and remember like the Scorpions video of like Gorky Park and stuff and how like cheesy like that was. And then they actually had their own like, you know, Russian metal and stuff. And you're like, these guys are behind the times. You know, it's like when you thought of Eastern Europe is like, holy shit, like that's where you pay $200 for some shitty Levi's. You can get it like Miller's Outpost for $10, you know. But then over time, they become capable with it, and it takes on its own character and identity, and it comes back. And like now, you know, my point in the analogy was that there's people that are like connoisseurs of that kind of metal. And likewise, I can imagine appreciating these games. And so the metal in this case is games like Doom. It's games, other you know, 3D Realms and stuff. And they, so they like Painkiller is one of these. That game came from Poland. And it's like it outdid. I think that's a much better game than Quake 4. And it's kind of like, well, what if they had another team, or if they just kept making the kind of games they did and evolved them in this way rather than trying to make them like really, you know, serious or somewhere in between. And so a lot of these games there, like Necrovision, definitely fit that bill, and Death Track Resurrection. They've always got like ridiculous names.
That was quite a trailer for Necrovision.
I dare you to listen to the whole thing.
I dare you.
But so the Cryostasis is it's a DX10. Like all of their stuff is like DX10, which is cool.
Cryostasis is like the perfect blending of Crysis and like BioShock in terms of a title. Like it calls to mind both of those
in
a word.
In some ways of the gameplay is like
I'm talking about purely the word. Yeah.
Yeah. So like the premise, I'm like, so far so good. And they're like, okay, this is set on a Russian, you know, ice breaking ship, and it's like lost in the Arctic Circle, and you're basically, you need to, you know, instead of a health bar, you have a heat meter, and you have to keep your body temperature up, and you do this by, you know, sources of available heat in the ship. And as long as it's not like the Dark World in you know, the Metroid games and things like that, where you're constant, where it's like you're always worried about it. But like there's in Lost Planet as well. Yeah,
I did play it for like 20 minutes. I mean, it's like you do have a health bar, and then you have a heat bar as well. And the heat bar, your internal temperature like has to max with your health, or else it'll just keep dropping and you'll take damage. And then you're using like either melee weapons or like bolt action rifles, and trying to hit enemies who are like frost themed as well. So like there was one guy who like it looked like he was hitting the ground and like sending out bursts of ice. So
do they leech your heat instead of your health?
Both. Yeah. They physically hurt you, and then there's other types of attacks that will.
But you know,
you.
They were showing off a lot of the DX10 features, like when they would put a heat source. And it would be like the ship's completely frozen, except around this heat source, you would see the water running like away from the heat source and stuff like that. I mean, it was graphically impressive, but it still is like a super long way to go. Like as soon as I started the demo, it was like crouched to pick up the weapon, but it didn't tell me how to pick up the weapon.
I'm still in that phase with it where I'm looking like beyond the technical stuff and just saying like, what is the potential it has, assuming it's going to have plenty of time to be, you know, fixed up. And it's like the whole concept that you touch someone, you touch a dead body, and you basically relive the last moments of their life. And you get elements of like, you know, the Final Destination movies and stuff like that, where it's kind of like, is this just like death porn? But it's more like a way to tell a story. And so, you know, in BioShock, you'd pick up these recordings and stuff, and you'd often hear people's last wishes and the events, you know, preceding their death. And here you actually get to experience it firsthand. So I tend to think of that as at least potentially as like a really, you know, streamlined way to tie all these multiple story threads together. And then it's got this element of, I mean, it's actual gameplay. So, you know, one example that was there is there's this crane. It ultimately falls on the guy and kills him. But you relive that part, and you can subtly alter the event. So he still dies, but the crane falls another way. And then that allows you to get through the environment somehow. The really bizarre thing they had is that there's a cow, and you touch that, and it's like, boom, all of a sudden you're on, like, the sluicing floor of, like, you know, the slaughterhouse or something, and you then move the cow and do something. And there's like a, this is something interesting in games, right? I mean, you have like, there's technically no reason why we should just be the same character
for the duration of a game. And in a lot of games, you know, I can think of plenty of games that aren't that way, you know, RPGs and stuff. But it'd be this kind of game where it lets you, like, you get to occupy all these different subject positions. I'll use to be a little too academic, but like in the course of the game, you know, it's not just what is it to be Gordon Freeman, but it's like, and this person and this person and this person.
I thought Eternal Darkness did that brilliantly.
I didn't play that, so I'm glad you have to tell me about it.
Yeah, it was a game where the narrative was tied together by one single person in like the present, but every time you would find like a scrap of history or whatever, you would essentially play a short chapter as a person who was going through this like really this like short Lovecraft story. Basically, it was like, I don't know how many, 12 or so different characters, 10.
Something like that, yeah.
And then like knowledge they would find in there, you would learn in the present. It was kind of a cool way to like say, okay, this person in the past went mad in the following fashion and died, but also learned this spell. So now you get that spell, and that was pretty brilliant.
Cool. Yeah, that. So maybe, hopefully they look to that for some lessons, and it's like, hopefully it's not too cheesy, because that's the other thing. We always talk about Stalker, if like we can get another scenario like that to come out of, you know, one of these Eastern European / Russian games. But yeah, like I just point people to the story, unless Anthony, if there's any other stuff there that got your interest, but it's like, it'd be easy to dismiss a lot of it and just like, eh, well, who the fuck cares? I mean, people aren't going to be searching like game sites for information on these games.
Yeah.
But you shouldn't dismiss them. I think there's like some potential there. And like, even the one that surprised me is the fucking 4x4 game. It's like, dude, who gives a shit? But I was like, when I started thinking through it, like, this is cool. This is different. You know, this is not just another version of MotorStorm yet again, or another one of, you know, like the basically mud, bog, and dirt games. It was like a really legitimate and serious minded simulation of, you know, operating this kind of vehicle. But it's like, if you imagine you're just in this world, and it's like, if crossing a creek bed can be a challenge, or just getting over, there's a ton of rocks or something, or like a muddy hill and you're trying to go up it. I mean, you can choose to go up it and do whatever. I mean, there's technical trials and there's time and stuff, but you have to know how to lock your differentials. You have to like do all these different things, maybe use a winch, and like, and it then becomes like, I'm kind of into, I mean, this is the fun part about Sims, right? You know, like I was saying also in the story that when I play IL2, it's a challenge if I can recover from a stall. And it's like, I get a sense of accomplishment from that. And you're like, well, big whoop, you don't stall in Ace Combat. Or if you did, you could just press a button to get out of it. That like defeats the purpose. So in here, it's like even the smallest thing. Can I get over the 20 feet of like terrain in front of me when that's kind of an accomplishment or a true achievement?
I respect that. I'm not sure if it's what I would want to do.
It's
for
a specific audience. Right? It was making me think like, well, what if I was playing a car racing game and I got a flat tire and the game made me change a tire?
Yeah.
Well, that's something in real life I hate doing.
Right. So that's the trick, though.
But think about something you obsess over and are cool with.
Yeah. You maybe it would be, it's not cool to change the tire, but maybe it would be cool if you're like, hey, what if I had a vehicle and I could actually get over this? And if you would look at it in most circumstances, you'd be like, that's not even horse terrain. How's anything going to get across there? It was a little different. But when they gave that demo, I really regret that I wasn't able to ask how many dogs I can fit in the backs of the trucks.
Well, maybe you can go back.
They might have had an answer for
that's
you.
That's my measure for quality in any off-roading vehicle. How many dogs can I fit in the back?
What size dogs?
I say this as someone who... this is another surprising thing that I was interested in that game. I say this as someone who, like, all through like college and stuff, I would go out of my way to use the beds of people's trucks as trash cans. Like, I would try, like, there's nothing in the bed of that truck. There won't ever be anything in the bed of that truck. So I better find some use for it. So I thought, take my trash out, just throw it in the back of the truck.
We might be at the wind down time for this week.
No, because Ryan wants to talk about the
What's it called? The donkey wheel? What's it called?
The frozen donkey wheel.
Right.
Or Lara Croft's time crank.
Right. Oh, spoiler alert. Lost spoiler alert. Sorry. That was just, you know. If you haven't seen the finale, we're going to talk about it here. And if you haven't, I don't know why. So go watch it, then listen. Okay. Yeah, so it was a magic crank.
Break that shit down.
What the fuck was that, Ryan?
How do you feel about it, Ryan?
I don't know.
Tell me.
You
don't know?
They moved the island.
Where? In time or space?
I don't know.
Oh, shit.
What do you mean you don't know? That's all you do. You sit on... Of course you know.
What do
you could write like a 25-page paper on it. Why are you holding out on us now?
I don't know where they put it.
Put that shit down. This is the episode.
Tell me you've thought about it.
In case you've forgotten.
Maybe they, I think they moved it to some later point in time.
I agree with that thing.
Like where
That's
else?
That's what I think. Or what if they moved it to an earlier point?
You would have to change it to such a radical point in time for the island to have moved, though. I mean, we're talking about like deep geological time for the island to be in another location.
Maybe the island's on a big boat or something, and it can move at any time.
Or it's on a giant turtle.
Wait, what?
Ryan, okay, so if depending on the type of island it is, how it's formed, I mean, we assume it's on the tectonic
plate.
Hold on,
you're trying to bring like scientific logic into this.
Well, no, I'm just saying islands move in the way that the Hawaiian, you know, that the Hawaiian island chain moves. And
no, it's not moving like so geologically.
They picked it up.
No, you're saying in time.
Fast forward 10 months and they plopped it down.
So it doesn't exist for the.
I thought you were saying
months.
Like they're moving through time, and that creates the movement because, like, yes, if you did go, say, you know, 200 million, I mean, you know, if you went like 50 million years,
it disappeared
in either direction,
at one point
the
in
island's
time,
going to physically be elsewhere
and reappeared at another point in time.
I think we shouldn't even. I don't think it's a question.
To explain this.
My problem with Lost Now is that's not even like a question I'm even interested in seriously answering.
Well, I think we all agreed before we turned on the mics that like now there could just be like cyborgs and shit on here.
There might as well.
Like
be.
There might as well. I still like it a lot. I love it.
It's fun. Yeah.
But it. Yeah.
But
they
I thought that
I don't need it to be
before this season
anymore.
Began. I mean,
right.
I was like, with season two is where you're just like, okay, they could just do anything they want.
Well, it's like this dude you mentioned, the bad guy, the guy who ended up being the bad guy of the season.
He sucked.
Who basically died like three times in the last episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he was like a vampire.
That was like eye patch dude last
what was
season.
That? What's that? The Chris Farley skit where he's on like some kind of like. Local play, you know, it's like some local drama production thing. This was a Saturday Night Live skit, and he's the guy who gets killed, except he's like wants he so loves being on the stage and acting that every time he keeps dragging it out and out, and they're like the guy's just like stabbing him again. He's like, oh no, I'm stabbed again, and it just goes on and on and on.
That's
because Chris Farley does not want to die on the stage, you know. He's kind of like that. He gets stabbed with like a K-bar, which is a, you know, combat knife. Big-ass thing right in the kidney, and then he climbs up a mountain, and then I thought it was kind of ridiculous because he descends the mountain on this elevator, and, you know, we don't know exactly how far down it goes, but when Locke asks, you know, Ben, how deep is it, he's like, deep, which was his, like, if he was Ghostface Killer, he would have said deeper than a Navy SEAL. So when they go down there, presumably the transmitter on his arm would lose contact or something, and then the explosives on the boat would have detonated. But no, that's some high-tech shit he's got. So he's able to go all the way down to the depths of the Earth, and this is Lost, so he might be halfway to China for all we know, mm-hmm. because that's where the time wheel's at. And the time wheel's not like some substratum shit. That's like deep. So then they go, and then the next thing we know is that
it's cold
Ben's turned into crank. There's like, it's all, it's frozen, and there's some hieroglyphs. There's like some ancient hieroglyphs like carved into the styrofoam walls.
He directly walked into Myst
cave.
At that point. I mean, this game
yeah, he
this
did,
show
right.
had been Myst at numerous other points, but that was totally a Myst puzzle.
There yeah.
There's a crank and some hieroglyphs. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm going to turn the crank.
Get a candle
you
to
hear
warm
a sound.
The handle.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So then he turns the time crank. And it's like, that was the straight out of Tomb Raider. We already talked about that, though, because that's how he controlled the smoke monster too. He went down into Laura Croft's.
That was my
basement.
Problem with the vampire dude with the, you know, the heart monitor was he the smoke monster attacked him and there's like nothing mm-hmm. happened after that and I was like he's back.
Yeah,
right.
Kid, he was smoke monstered.
He's like right. more indestructible than the kid in Jurassic Park after he got shocked on that fence.
It's like you ain't gonna die. That was your time to die if you were going to.
So this the retarded theory that's probably true because it's Lost again is that the polar bear that ended up in the desert where, you know, they showed what's her face, you know, the archaeologist, she dug up the polar bear skeleton, got there because they would use polar bears to turn that big ass crank. And the reason they would do it is because every time you turn the crank, you have to leave the island. And they didn't. It eventually got to a point where they didn't want to like have to sacrifice a person.
Right.
The island.
And it's cold down there, so polar bears are suited to the environment.
The polar bear down in there, yeah, where it's all cold to turn the time crank.
not realistic.
Now, it's,
that makes total
it's
sense.
It's so
to me.
Stupid it? That it
Ben wound up in the same place the polar bear was, right?
So yep. You think they were using bears to turn the wheel?
Yes.
I don't think so.
I don't
so
even
it's
know
like a
anymore.
Circus.
That's actually kind of plausible.
That makes
though,
too much sense.
But see, Anthony, who's cringing now, compared this. He's like, "Oh, it sounds like Twilight Zone," and I found that offensive. As like
as the creator of the Twilight Zone,
yeah, as Rod Serling, I found that personally offensive because what I would try to do with each of my episodes in my Twilight Zone series was to have some mystery, but also to explore like many old Star Trek episodes, some you know ethical.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Or philosophical.
Therefore, racism is bad.
Right. And then and then to wrap it up at the end of each episode.
Yeah.
Now, this, the comparison, like, you know, holds insofar as this show has got a bunch of mysteries, but mm-hmm. it's missing the philosophical angle and then any sense of closure. So,
but you're comparing a half hour one off episode to a six season.
I'm like, Rod Serling. Of course not.
Do you think that they're going to have a satisfying conclusion to all this?
They better.
But do you think they will? I mean, they're better. It tells me you're fooling yourself.
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't think they're going to.
I think you tripped.
I'm not sure if they will, and I sort of don't care.
I still enjoy.
I'm just enjoying the weekly thing.
I want to hope that it's worth it at the end. That...
Again, I refer to the X-Files
exactly,
as having been burned.
I was gonna say. I've been burned by too many shows to expect.
Where they had a mystery but had no idea where it was going.
Especially
and then
this kind
of admitted
of
it.
Yeah, and it's a problem for me, isn't it?
Twin Peaks.
If you just stop caring about it, and you because the big attraction,
then you're free.
The big attraction to this show, though, all along, was that engagement. That like, if I just think through this hard enough, it will like I will come to conclusions that other people haven't been able to because they haven't either looked hard enough or haven't been perceptive enough. And when you get to the point where you no longer believe in that, you lose a huge portion of what made the show, you know, so attractive in the first place.
Right, I am at the point with it where everything I see that like has the air of a clue to me is just instantly a red herring.
Mm-hmm.
It's like because they show that to me, and because I can kind of make a logical connection, it is therefore completely the wrong connection to make.
Yeah,
I do think that they definitely feel like they're on a course now. I think it seems to me like they're laying enough clues that they've thought it through. Whether what they've thought through is actually going to be satisfying to us. I mean, that could just be the old cliche of, you know, that it's never going to be as good as what we could, what we are going to imagine in our heads, right? It's just doomed to be disappointing
but
in some way.
But we do know, though.
It's almost more fun not to know.
I mean, I don't think they had, this series was not written and scripted in its entirety from the beginning.
No, it was not.
And then we're seeing it just, you know, being recorded and performed and filmed and stuff. And because of that, I think that you always have to build in the wiggle room to say, shit, we need to stretch this out. We need to pad this out.
We need some tailies.
And there's just so much potential for things to go wrong.
It feels to me like they're past that. Like that's what season 2 and 3 were about, that kind of padding and we don't know where we're going.
Right. And yeah, I mean, they committed to like, okay, we know exactly how many episodes we have left. This is what we needed ABC to commit to. I mean, this is a problem with TV as a medium in general in America, at least.
But like X-Files, that's what happened to X-Files.
Is like, exactly. Brazilian television, like they often make series and they're like, this is a 13-episode series. We will have a beginning and end. It's like a novel.
Yeah.
Right.
And they just don't, this is what's don't good do that
Battlestar is that it's ending, you know, it's like.
Thank God.
It's so rare when they do that.
Dude. Like, it's sorry. Good.
I've
still
become
think
a hater.
It's by far better than Lost.
It's better. I'm only about to start season 3.
Now, The Wire was another example of one that had a limited run. It was brilliant all the way up to the last one.
I mean, as a writer, you just have to know
that
exactly.
That guy's making Generation Kill. I'm excited about that.
Very excited about that.
The book is good.
Oh, I haven't read the book. Yeah, David Simon, the guy who made The Wire, has I think it's a 7-part series called Generation Kill.
Someone's
going
to have to tape it
HBO.
For me.
I'll be TiVoing it.
Lost.
I'll be looking. But yeah, back to Lost. I don't know how much there is. I mean, Ryan, you're still a true believer, right? Lost is like the Green Lantern to you. Like, it can do no wrong.
What the hell?
It can spawn Guy Gardner's and Booster Gold's, and it's still...
Hey, Guy Gardner's cool.
Yeah, I mean, this episode did not in any way have the impact of the last season's one.
Finale. No. With What's-His-Face in the coffin. If we want to not spoil it.
We can spoil it.
We spoiled the rest. It's freaking Locke in the coffin.
Yeah,
right.
And there were two alternate endings they filmed that to throw people off.
Yeah, whatever.
With Desmond and Sawyer in the coffin.
So yeah, Locke's in the coffin. Who knows? freaking knows why. I think it's like a, again, I think it's a total red herring.
Yeah, that's a little bit of the problem, what you're saying, where when certain things go out the window, it does sort of, you know, it dissipates any of, like, I had no feeling of, like, ooh, when they right. showed Locke, because it's like, well, okay, there could be 18 fucking different explanations for this now. Mm-hmm. I mean, because they've thrown logic out the window, so I don't right. know. He's probably not dead, right? Or if he's dead, he's going to go back in time and be alive or right. whatever. Or yeah. this is some alternate
right.
lock.
No gravity.
Whatever the fuck.
That's well, the they trick. Even say, like, he has to come back to the island with us.
Right. So then what is the big scary, like, oh, my God, or, you know, that big horrific thing of seeing Locke in the coffin? Is there one person was like, oh, my God, he's dead?
And it doesn't matter, though, because death itself has been made irrelevant, you know?
Well, right.
I mean, you have dead people all over this
Yeah,
this
that's
show.
Right. They're all over.
And
visits people.
This is kind of like a tangent. I was reading, you know, like I showed you, and Guy put up a review of Metal Gear 4. I thought it was great, but I left some comments. But when he was talking about, you know, the importance of, you know, the war economy as a theme in the game, and I was like, but please tell me, though, that there's not this, you know, this Russian doll arrangement of conspiracies on top of that. Because, like, if it's anything like the previous Metal Gear games, it's like, well, who cares about whatever it's encouraging you to think through about a war economy when the fucking president's like the chief conspirator and then the government's controlled by dead people's fucking AI and right. like every other like bit of batshit insanity. So it's like, yeah. you know, it's like, okay, well, why are we worried about people profiteering on war when it's like the fucking, like if George Bush was like a literal boogeyman, you know?
Right.
Like what if he was the smoke monster?
Oh, it's the
like
scroll.
Suddenly you don't like, well, fuck the war commie. Like, we got the smoke monster in the Oval Office.
That's a bigger problem.
Yeah, right. We'll deal with the economy after we get the giant space alien not to be our president anymore. Because that's kind of fucked up.
Yeah. So that I mean, I think that
it'd solve itself
Lost
that.
Has that issue too, you know? I mean, like where you remove the sting of death and you remove, you know, the constraints yeah. of logic. And after a while, you just guarantee that
right.
whatever solution or to your riddle is going to be one that no one would have ever guessed in the first place. And I've mm-hmm. accused Jeff Loeb, a comics writer, of these sort of like shitty mystery stories and detective stories where it's like, imagine a detective story where not one, you know, bit of thinking you could have done and observation and induction and deduction as you're seeing this thing could have helped you
right.
decipher the fucking culprit, because the culprit's introduced on the last page and mm-hmm. never existed or never appeared in any way, shape, or form, not only in the book but in the fucking history of like the fucking comic
did
franchise.
You know you had a son? No.
Yeah, dude.
Oh. Yeah. Well, he did it.
Yeah. Yes.
So let's hope they don't do that.
Right.
Hoping. Still watching.
Did you ever read Batman Hush?
That's one I'm kind of referring to. That and Long Halloween. Hush is the biggest... Sorry, let's all pause for Anthony to
sorry.
soak teach us about emphysema.
Is that a yawn?
No.
He's done.
I'm cool.
Yeah, Hush was...
Originally, I was trying to just hold out, and then I really just wanted to, like, when you guys were like, Anthony, do you have anything to say about Lost? And I just wanted to be like...
Yeah, you were
and walk away.
Were you holding one in the whole time?
No, I got nothing, man. Yeah. Save them all for Vince.
All right.
You didn't like Hush either.
I did not.
We're not going to wrap up, Jeff. You can go. You guys can leave. Ryan and I got to talk about comics.
You can't. I have to go. You can keep it rolling. You want to talk about comics?
No, we're good. Unless, Ryan, unless you got something to say.
I'm cool.
Would you Lost comic? Would you buy it?
No.
What if you heard it was...
written by Jeff Lowe.
Canon.
Thank you. That was the word I was looking for.
No.
Bullshit.
You wouldn't buy it. If it was canon.
What if it was written by Mark Waid? Is that...
Oh... I might buy it.
Hey, Mark Waid's pretty cool.
Well, would you buy a Lost comic by Mark Waid?
Okay, so there's a world where you would buy a Lost comic, then.
I am a great fan of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Joss Whedon wrote it, then.
But even this Joss Whedon-penned comic that is currently, you know...
Season 8, quote-unquote?
Like, I've read some of it. Like,
which
I
one? The Serenity or the X-Men?
Buffy.
Oh, but Buffy
Buffy
comic.
The Vampire Slayer.
Okay.
Season 8 in comics. Like, it doesn't interest me.
Not doing it for you. Huh.
I mean, the idea, I guess, is kind of cool.
Like the Simpsons
you can't
comic.
Continue it on TV, but...
There's no continuity in the Simpsons.
It's like, it's just kind of dumb. I wouldn't read a Lost comic.
Okay.
Fuck yeah, dude. Give me some skin. Let's talk about how Anthony just picked up Serenity Comics and we out. Okay, we're done.
Bye-bye.